Just a little technical difficulty. I'm telling you, if we get through a show here, you almost died on a chair that broke.
Yeah, the chairs here are made of balsa wood.
Is that the back went out on you?
Yeah.
Right.
You had that happen?
It's like a circus ride.
Listen, welcome to the show. I'm Wendy Snyder. That's Bill Leff. And whether I complain or not, people call me a whiner, so I may as well just get it off my chest.
Complain away.
We have David Kaczynski coming on here, who is Ted Kaczynski's brother, the Unabomber.
Yes.
I have so many questions. I know you do as well.
Yes.
And we have some rugby guys coming in here. So here's what I think we should do. These chairs are in terrible disarray. Mm-hmm. This is beautiful real estate, the All-State Showcase Studio, right in front of Michigan Avenue. It's gorgeous.
The most beautiful radio studio in the country, if not the world.
Oh, my God. You've been in radio a long time. I'm going on my 30th year. I've never been in a studio so beautiful.
Yep.
That said.
Yeah.
These chairs are in complete disarray. I really, you know what? You guys all say I whine anyway, so I'm really going to do it this time. You almost fell.
I almost lost my life for this for the job.
During the crosstalk, which kills me because Cochran would have gotten credit for it.
Right. He would have gotten the ratings.
Did Kevin laugh at you? Because usually I sit in that chair during crosstalk.
I would have.
Kevin would have laughed.
Yeah, when I fall backward, he laughs.
He enjoys that.
Well, then I checked for his well-being after laughing.
Yeah, he does after laughing.
It's embarrassing when guests come in here, and we don't have any water. And
there's
again,
no water.
I don't want to complain about that, because look at Flint, Michigan. I know. Shut up, Wendy. Quit whining. No. It's embarrassing. I can live with it, but when you have guests in here, don't
right.
you feel real? They go, hey, do you have any water? No.
Right.
Do you don't have a drinking fountain? No. You want me to get you some snow? I'll cup it in my hands.
And then have it melt for them. Well, we certainly don't want any guests to perish. We don't want them to sit in a substandard chair that would take their lives. That would look bad.
Have the rugby guys beat the crap out of these chairs so we'll have no chairs.
Some new
so
chairs come.
We have to get new chairs.
All right.
Do you have the All Blacks coming in?
One of the members
of them.
Of them,
wow,
yes.
Wow, nice.
Yes, yes. This was pitched to us as hunky rugby players. They
and
just
you said, yes before I did.
I said, it's been a while since we've had any hunky rugby players. Bring in a couple of them. Why
they
not?
They were in last year, and you and I don't know a lot about rugby. We certainly learned. Well, you learned a lot. I just stared at them.
I don't know anything about rugby at all. Zero. I don't know how you score it. Steve mentioned the only team, the All Blacks, is the only rugby team I could name. I couldn't name another rugby team, and there's hundreds of them.
You know, there are people who say that if the NFL and football here would go to a helmetless game like they do in rugby,
yeah.
that there might be far fewer head injuries.
I bet.
I'm sure.
I bet.
How do we do that?
Well, you take the helmets away.
All right. Anybody have a key to the locker room?
That's not a bad idea. I just saw a report, and I'm trying to remember where I saw it over the weekend, and I already kind of knew this, but, you know, with all the talk about concussions in the NFL because of the book and because of the movie and because of the class action suit, that's getting all the attention. But I saw this show where doctors were saying, oh, you know who it was? It was Dr. Gupta on the cable.
Sanjay Gupta?
Dr. Sanjay Gupta on the cable. He said the real problem, and he said, don't get me wrong, the NFL problem is a very, very serious problem. But the bigger problem is soccer, and most directly girls' soccer at a high school, at a grade school, mostly high school. They focus mostly on high school and then college level. And then they chronicled some girls who had concussions. And they show, I mean, you know, everybody has a camera now, so they showed videotapes of these girls playing soccer and, you know, heading the ball. And these girls are couldn't be more messed up just because of...
From a soccer ball
yeah.
or from falls?
A couple of them were from falls, but they want to amend the rules for girls' soccer. And I find this ridiculous. If they know it's a problem, they need to do a better job. But they said they want to change the rule to where you can't hit a header until you're 18 or over. Because
yeah.
I guess
guys and
is,
girls or just girls?
They focused on girls.
That is lame.
They focused on girls.
There already are limits, but they're not up to 18. I think they're 12 or
yeah, it's,
in some spots.
That sounds right.
But I talked to a doctor once, you know, because my son played soccer and so did my daughter. And some kids wear those like soft helmets.
Yeah.
And he said, the doctor, the radiologist I talked to said, it didn't matter because the injury is from this sudden start and stop.
That's what's doing it.
Right. So even if it's cushioned, It's the acceleration and deceleration of your brain against the skull. So, no way to do it in a healthy way.
Well, so don't you get that in basketball as you're starting and stopping or in tennis?
No, go on, Steve.
Not the same with your head. With your head, you're hitting a ball at an acceleration and...
Oh, so I thought you just meant the running the starting and stopping, because your brain sloshes a little bit when you run, too.
Without a doubt. But it's the trauma of a hard object coming at a speed. And you, even though, like on some of these, they were just showing, and I don't watch a lot of soccer. I've seen a little bit, what looked to be a routine play where the ball's up in the air and somebody just pokes it with their head and then the play goes on. But they were saying that over a period of time, and I mean, they showed these girls where this was their life. This was the sport that they loved, and all they wanted to do was play. And then they just had to stop.
That's
it. You can't play anymore because it was causing.
Okay.
This one girl was explaining how she had headaches, that a day didn't go by that she wasn't having migraine headaches because of the sport of soccer.
But here's the thing about that. I mean, I don't doubt the science and everything. The whole world has been playing soccer
for a long time.
For a long time.
And it hasn't changed so much like football has.
Well, and not like so. I mean, we're relatively new to it, but, you know, Europe and in Asia and in South America, they've been doing it forever.
Right.
They're not all adult. Right? All kids.
Right. And kids, migraines can come from, I mean, that could just be a coincidence.
But the point they were making was, even though they're not adult now as kids, what will happen is like what happens with NFL players.
Well, I get that, Bill, but they've been playing that game for 60 or 70 years.
Get Rod Stewart on the line. He's been playing forever. See if he's, well, he is adult, but.
But that's kind of my point.
Yeah.
You know, it's been baseball and football all wrapped into one in Europe and Central America. And, you know, I don't hear it being a huge, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not that many kids play soccer here in relation to there.
Not yet.
It's really picking up, though.
It is really picking. Like, when we went to school, I can't speak for the schools you guys went to, but soccer was not an option as a sport.
But you played it in gym class, didn't you? You didn't have gym class, did you?
No, in high school we did, not in grade school. I guess we played it for a very short amount of time, but
I loved it, but there wasn't a team you could be on.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. But now I think almost every school has that as an option,
AYSO, American Youth Soccer Organization, is really the first thing you put your kids in to teach them teamwork when they're little, because it's a volunteer-based soccer place. And my kids were, one of them was just out in the field, like spinning around, looking around.
You probably can't go pro based on that skill set, but... As long as he was having fun.
He was having fun. It was never where the ball was.
He could play for the Bears if that was a soccer team instead
of
an NFL team.
My other son was pretty good. It's just a weird thing. But AYSO, I thought, was really beneficial in getting kids into team sports at a very young age, and it was no cut. So it was really good to teach them, here's what a team sport is like.
Yeah.
But it's still nowhere near as popular here.
Oh, no.
And rugby, as Bertrand said, we got to take their helmets away.
That's it.
Sneak in.
Right.
312-981-7200. Quick break. And then, John, you're on hold. Why don't you stay there? We'll talk to you after this. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We started talking about soccer because we have a couple of rugby players coming in later on. And we were saying that, you know, rugby hasn't really taken over the states like it has elsewhere. And someone just texted us at 312-981-7200. My daughter just started playing rugby at college, ASU. She played soccer for many years. It's hard for me to watch the rugby thing, but she's doing it. So it's happening.
I just don't understand. We'll certainly talk to the guys when they come in. We will not talk to them.
We'll just look at them.
We'll just stare at them, and then they'll be free to leave. I would enjoy it a whole lot more if I understood the rules and the scoring. I think it's like, I hate to compare, but almost every time I've brought my wife in to enjoy a sport with me as we're watching the game, I have to explain, you know, because she just didn't grow up watching sports much. So I know how she feels when rugby's on. I don't know what they're doing.
We'll ask them.
All right.
And we were also then spinning off into a little soccer talk about, you saw Sanjay Gupta.
Yeah, he was warning people right there on the cable that soccer for girls in high school can be a very, very dangerous thing.
I wonder why not boys?
I think it is probably for boys as well. This particular report just centered around girls, but I of course it would have to be. Why wouldn't it be?
And John, you have called in to chat soccer, huh?
I have called in to chat soccer, football, national football. But Wendy, you're exactly right as far as the AYSO goes. And there was actually an article in the Tribune last week, I think, where what they're trying to do is implement, you know, I believe they're going down to what they refer to as U10, so under 10. So kids that are 10 or 9, they're going to restrict any heading. And the reason that they say that is that they're not properly trained in heading the ball. But the more interesting thing about heading, it's not really heading the ball that is creating the trauma.
What is it?
It's when two players go up, you know, to head the same ball.
Yeah.
It's when the two players, and it's perfectly legal that they go up and challenge a ball in the air. They both try and head it.
Oh.
And it's the head-to-head contact that is really, you know, causing most of the injuries. There are products out there, much like you talked about, getting rid of the helmets in football. So there's something that's called like a full 90, where it protects the very soft areas of the head. It hasn't really taken root into soccer, which I'm surprised at because of the head injuries. But you know, we do have. I'm a 20-year state certified referee. I'm really surprised that it hasn't until recently. It hasn't been something that's more enforced. If you see something that you think is a head contact, then you stop the play, and then, you know, we ask, you know, what's your name, what day is it, what day of the week is it, where are you, things like that. So much like other sports, now we're much more in tune to it.
That's good. That's good to know.
That's progress. But, John, here's what they showed in this report. They said that one of the problems is, unlike professional sports, where if a player has a hard hit, they take them off to the sidelines and a doctor checks them out and they do a series of tests. They said in at girls' high school level or beyond, you know, even younger or older, they said that these girls, just because you have a concussion doesn't mean you black out, you know. So a lot of these times these girls will take a hard hit and then the coach will just go, hey, everything's good. And, you know, they don't want to be ostracized for leaving the game. They don't want to look like, you know, they're just walking off and being a baby. So they stay in the game.
And maybe an injury on top of that is what the problem is.
That used to be the case. That is no longer the case. That now there has to be a medical person, especially high school level, on the sidelines. And they have to then do whatever it is that they're required to do. They have to sign off on the fact that that player is, you know, cognizant and able to return to play. So the thankfully, not just the referees, but the school, the medical staff are then responsible for making the determination as to whether that player is going to continue.
John, thank you for the info. We have to run for news. We really appreciate it. Someone else just texted, cheerleaders have it the worst. Most severe injuries, but not considered a sport, so it doesn't have regulations and doctors like other official school sports. That's
interesting. That would make sense, right?
Absolutely. Thanks, John.
All right, here's the game plan. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then a lot more show ahead. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I know I'm right.
Let the record show on February 16th at 10:36. You are correct, sir.
Listen, I did not watch the Grammys last night.
What?
There was too much on.
Wendy.
If it's, the show has changed. You can get a complete recap of everything.
I know,
I'm getting criticized by one texter.
I'm going to text in, too. That's your job is to watch the Grammys.
It is not my
job. You have to watch the Grammys.
And because I didn't, they want us to bring Bob and Marianne back.
All right. Fine.
I'd be cool with that.
All right, Marianne's show business report to the nation will be starting now.
No. Yes. I caught up with everything, and we were talking about Taylor Swift, who I just find to be so adorable and talented.
Impossible not to. She's fantastic.
I mean, at first you'd think, you know, oh, she's just another one of those little bubblegummy kind of pop divas. No, she's
forced
great.
To be reckoned with. And I think she said last night, during her speech, thank you for being a fan or for accepting me for 10 years. Has she been around for 10 years already? Wow, that was fast. I would not have guessed 10 years. Like, in my head, it's 3 or 4. It's not 10. She's grown up right before our eyes. She's like you.
Anyway, the reason I was right, but I don't want to be right. I just want to tell you this. We were talking about her album of the year, and I said it's 1989.
Yeah.
You said it was 1979.
I thought it was 79.
Regardless, was that the year she was born? Why is it
that? I think
that?
It is. Yeah, so it would be 1989. Yeah. I got a prequel album. She recorded 10 years ago. She did an album called 1979, and I think I don't think it gets appreciated the way it should.
Well, didn't this Smashing Pumpkins did a 1979 song?
Yes, they did. Yes,
so
they
there's some problem.
It
there.
All ties in. She mentioned yesterday she in a thinly veiled slam at Kanye West, which I'm fine with, that he is not responsible for her success, as he has alluded to recently in a tweet.
And may I ask you that question? Because wasn't she the one who was up on stage before when he went up and grabbed the award?
Yes.
And, you know, why is it poor Swifty, T-Swift, that he's doing? That's just not right. And how could, I'm sorry, I'm pleading ignorance here. How did he allegedly discover her?
He maintains that without that episode, where she was already winning an award, so it's not like she came out of nowhere. She was already winning an award. That without that episode where he came up, that she would not still be famous to this day.
She was huge by then.
She was already gigantic. You can't, yeah. That's impossible to believe that. But, I mean,
how does he get off saying that?
I don't know. He's one of those guys that just plays by his own rules. I don't know. You know, I was going to bring this up later anyway. I'll just bring it up really quickly now. He says that white publications, I want to get the exact wording right, have to stop commenting on black music. That people who are listening to the music will only understand the music if they're of the same race that he is, which is reverse racism, isn't it?
Yes.
It is.
And tell that to Eminem.
Tell that to Eminem is right.
Well, I got to be honest with you, as a pretty damn decent rapper.
Him
or not,
yeah.
And that's not my favorite music vein, but he is pretty damn good.
But Kanye West, and you and I were talking about this off air the other day because he was on Saturday Night Live over the weekend, and he's just so self-indulgent. I mean, he just is. Whenever he performs, all I see is him saying, am I enjoying this? I don't care about the audience so much. Is this working for me?
Yeah, but what did you say he was laying down?
He was laying down at some point. I've seen him do that before, and I thought to myself, hey, if you're bored with it, what chance do I stand? You're singing the song. You wrote the song. You're singing the song. You're laying there. I'm trying to watch at home. I'm going to fall asleep before you do.
I DVR'd it. He was on SNL. I forgot.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was a repeat.
Yeah. But Taylor Swift was very classy last night in saying, if you're a woman out there and you want to get involved in a job like this, do it and don't let some guy try to grab the credit for
what
anybody. You've done. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Not loving her haircut.
Yeah. I don't know. Her hair
it's
was
a
all right.
Tatum O'Neill and Bad News Bears. I had that haircut when I was 8.
There were a lot of people criticizing the haircut. There were a lot of people criticizing the outfit
the
she
top.
Wore. Yeah. But I mean, really, she is a trendsetter. So I'm sure there are people going out today to get their hair cut like her and buying the outfit she wore.
If you want to talk trendsetter, Bill, I wore a tube top and had a haircut like that when I was like 8 or 10 years old. So you want to talk about trendsetter?
All right. You're
looking at her right here.
She mentioned you in her speech last night. She said, don't let Wendy grab credit for my success.
Hi, Greg.
How you doing, Bill? Hi, Wendy.
Hi.
According to Kanye... according to him, this is...
By the way, that's a new segment we're starting, and you can host it, Greg, according to Kanye.
Yep, every Tuesday.
Well, according to him, she was just a very popular country singer.
She
and
was.
After he rushed the stage, that kind of shot her into the stratosphere.
You don't believe that, though, do you?
As a backlash for him.
But you don't believe that.
No, to me, I haven't believed anything Kanye says since his mother died. He's been acting strange ever since his mother died.
You're right.
I think the guy needs psychiatric help myself.
We were just talking about that off the air, honestly. I totally believe it, and what a terrible thing to have his mother die.
Well, because you see what the fame did to Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So imagine if you have the only person you can trust in your life at the time die, and you're at the time he was the hottest rap artist at the time he was the hottest rap artist in the country,
yes,
in the world at the time.
Yes.
So and your alter ego is conceit. You know, the conceited artist. I'm the greatest artist. And eventually, somebody has to go to your head, and you start believing your own credit. You know.
Right. Right. But you buy what I'm saying about him just being self-indulgent at this point. It's not even.
Well, I think it's beyond self-indulgent. I think it's delusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Hey, Greg.
I think he needs psychiatric help or something. Something's going to come. Something's going to seriously happen to him.
I mean, seriously. Plus, to be married to Kim Kardashian, he needs some therapy to talk about that too.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
He needs penicillin.
All right, Greg.
Kim Kardashian. Take care.
Wait. How many people have told you sound just like Chris Rock?
No one. My voice goes up when I get angry, so sometimes I sound like Mr. Bill.
Honestly, it'll never. To me, you sound very much like Chris Rock. But which is a good thing.
That Mr. Bill reference kind of ages me. I am in my 50s.
That's all right.
Sound like it.
Don't worry. You sound great.
We are too.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. Take care, guys.
Do you remember the stories last year? Kanye West shows up in New York for New York Fashion Week. Now, Kanye West, you can argue whether or not he is or is not a good musical performer, but at some point he decided, I'm also going to be a fashion designer. So he shows up to Fashion Week in New York, where they have a very rigid schedule of who gets to show what at what time. And then all of a sudden, legitimate designers are bumped from the show so that Kanye West, who was not scheduled, could show his wares on the runway. And a lot of designers are like, hey, that's not fair.
Yeah, it isn't.
You can't do that to me. This is my business. I'm here in New York to show people my line. Kanye West just shows up and they put him on the schedule. That doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right. I'm looking at something that is taking my attention away. Love you, Bill and Wendy, but please never use the phrase reverse racism again. Anyone can be racist. And adding a qualifier to the front suggests that only white people can perpetuate regular racism. It's all the same and it's all terrible. And that is true.
Yeah, it is. It's just
racism.
It is racism.
And, you know, who is he to say that?
But as I read that last night, I thought to myself, this seems so wrong for him to say white publications don't understand my music. They can't comment on black music. But then I was thinking back to Saturday when I'm watching him on TV and just I'm baffled by it. I'm going, is anyone enjoying what he's doing right now? Does anyone find this good?
What's the quote again? Could you give that to me?
Yeah. I want to find the exact tweet. It's paraphrased here. It says Kanye West asks white publications to stop commenting on black music. And then there's a series of tweets. I'll find the one.
That's good enough because as 319 just pointed out, so Kim Kardashian can't listen to his music or...
Oh, I guess not.
Because she's white.
Well, she can listen. She can't comment on it.
Well, that would be typical of him.
Right.
Right, but if she can't understand it, maybe she shouldn't buy it.
I don't think she understands English.
That's possible, too. I have all the tweets. We have to take a break, and then we're going to talk to...
But isn't that a good point? Kanye's married to a white girl, so
right.
Don't say that.
Right.
He needs help.
Let's.
Chris Rock is right.
Chris Rock / Mr. Bill. Let's take a break. We'll talk to the people over at CNET, and then we'll talk about this later, because it's a series of tweets that are very condemning. We'll get to that later on. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You know what that music means.
Time to dance.
It means Talking Heads was one of the best bands ever. And it means it's a Tech Tuesday. And sitting in for Bridget Carey this week is Ashley Esqueda. And Ashley, we are going to talk about some fantastic things in the world of tech today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am married to a huge Star Wars fan, and he collects action figures. Bill, you collect some kinds of action figures in Star Wars, but all over the board. Mm-hmm. What about digital games for Star Wars fans?
Oh, man. Well, this is a big week for Star Wars fans. I mean, production on Episode 8 started this last week, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the toy fair is happening in New York. And, of course, this is the time of year where any toy collector is very excited to see all the new things coming out. Interestingly enough, Mattel is pretty excited about bringing some pretty high-tech toys into mainstream retail stores. You're going to be able to pick up a 3D printer for your kids, make their own toys to create and 3D print their own toys with what they're calling a thing maker, the thing maker.
Now wasn't there a thing maker
years
before
years
when
ago.
We were growing up?
Yeah, that's from forever ago.
And you put like goop in there and it
they
cooked
it
in
goop.
A little oven?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved that.
But now it's a higher tech version.
Now it's a 3D printer. So
wow.
if you remember the thing maker from way back when, you're now it comes with a companion app that was created in collaboration with Autodesk. So it's a 3D modeling app, but made for kids, easily accessible. And kids will be able to design their own toys and send it to the 3D printer, the thing maker, and the thing maker will 3D print a toy for them.
That's so cool. Now, it used to be, when we had it, it was $11. I bet it's still $11, right?
It is $11 plus $289.
Is it really? Yeah.
The app is $289.
Wow.
The box is $11. No, so yeah, it's $300 all in. The
that
app
is not that bad.
Island. Considering that a lot of 3D printers are about, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 or higher.
To 10,000.
Yeah, I mean, they can be really expensive. So this is a good opportunity for your little maker to get in there and create their own toys.
Or Bill.
I would do it.
And think about when we just got a printer. The first printer I bought was probably $299.
Oh, if not more.
Yeah.
I bet more.
So look, this is a 3D. You can make toys. You can make a new mommy if you don't like your mommy.
It'll be just like Coraline, but in real life.
Yes. Yes, the Mattel Mommy Maker. That'll be great. Ashley, were you actually at the show in New York? Did you go to it?
I don't get to go to the toy fair because we have a New York office. So all of those lucky folks, all of those lucky folks get to go visit the New York toy fair, but I get to visit Comic-Con. So it's sort of an even trade.
All right. That's a good balance. Now one of the companies, Hasbro, they've changed their focus a little bit. They want kids to play the way that they used to play. They've kind of shied away from more electronic toys, right?
Yeah, this is a really interesting move. At the toy fair, a lot of people were expecting, obviously, Mattel, they have this thing maker. They've got a Barbie smart dream home now that has voice commands and things like that. But Hasbro really kind of kept it analog for the most part. I mean, they are involved in some high technology toys and they've invested in some companies, but most of the toys were analog. So action figures, plush dolls that maybe... I know they have an Elmo doll that's sort of a little bit technology infused where you're able to sort of encourage kids and then track their progress on like good deeds or good behavior in an app for the parent. But for the most part, they were pretty clear that they wanted to really focus on the play as opposed to the technology surrounding play. There's so much technology involved in toys now that I think it's pretty fascinating that Hasbro has kind of not necessarily taking a stand, but really just saying, hey, like we want kids to not only be digitally savvy, which they should be, they have to be digitally savvy. They should know how to use computers and iPads and all the other things that we have, but we also want them to be socially savvy. And when you put a kid in front of a screen, they are not necessarily interacting with others, parents or other kids, the way that you really want them to.
True.
And so that's kind of the idea behind their line of toys this year, which I thought was really kind of a noble cause and actually really important. We kind of forget that it's easy to become socially isolated from others when we are all, you know, you see the image of everybody kind of looking on their phones at a picture on the subway or something like that. And I know that, you know, before we used to all look at newspapers and it was sort of the same. We all kind of ignored each other, but it is important to sort of instill those social skills in kids, especially through play. And so Hasbro is really kind of, they're really kind of focusing on that aspect of play.
But doesn't Star Wars have like an interactive game? I can't think of the
name
of it.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. So they do have some, like I said, I mean, Hasbro does make some technology. I mean, I believe they are the creators of Furby. So Furby now is connected. They have an app for Furby and everything. But their lineup for this year was very much, they kind of took a look at everything and said, okay, well, we're still going to make some technology stuff, but we're not going to go all in on that. And we don't want to encourage kids to be glued to a screen. We don't want them to have their, I believe they call it like oversaturation of screen time. We don't want them to be, you know, on a screen all day long. We want them to play and use their imagination and you know, use action figures and things like that.
But Ashley, I like what you're saying. Technology is allowing us to ignore each other in newer and more innovative ways. That's fantastic.
That is true. Yeah, that is true. And I trust me, I wouldn't have. This is why I love my job. I get to ignore everyone around me, my Instagram and my husband.
I just told Bill off the air that I just, after watching the new episode of Walking Dead, which I thought was the best of the whole series so far, I downloaded the Walking Dead game. And I don't even know how to play it, but it's kind of fun. I've been slashing away at zombies, and I feel bad that I downloaded it because it's just another time suck like Candy Crush and Cookie Jam is for me.
Sure, until there's a zombie apocalypse, and then you will lead
us. I'll be
us.
Ready.
So no more
complaints.
And then
you'll be ready.
Yeah.
And you said Barbie has a smart house and all these things. It's poor Barbie, man. Even her house is smarter than she is.
Well, you know, actually, I'm gonna challenge you just a little bit on that one, Wendy, because now we saw a few weeks ago Mattel had announced that they have new Barbie. So they have these new Barbies.
Oh, that's
they
right. Curvy.
The Madam President Barbie. They have the game developer Barbie. They have a whole line of spy Barbies. So
oh, spy Barbie.
Fortunately, Barbie's getting out there and doing some cool and interesting things that that women have been doing for a while now. So it's nice to see that. But now her smart home is entirely connected. You actually have to have an outlet nearby because it needs some charge.
And there's a Barbie drone, right? So she can, I guess, spy on Skipper. Why else would Barbie have a drone?
She's always been jealous of Skipper.
she got to keep an eye on Skipper, make sure Skipper gets home before curfew.
Good, that's
so, yeah,
a good
she's
thing.
Got they're calling it a hoverboard, and it's a quadcopter with a Barbie kind of in a surfing position on top of it, and then you can kind of fly it around in the house.
Isn't that something?
No.
Speaking of hoverboards, another one exploded yesterday.
A family.
At some point, they've got to take these off the market, don't they, Ashley? They just keep exploding.
Well, we did. Some, Amazon had said they wouldn't ship them for the holidays, like after a lot of these batteries, these kind of cheaply made batteries started lighting on fire. And now you're not allowed to take them on an airplane. I think what is going to happen is we're going to see some lithium ion battery regulation
yes.
on those. And I have to refuse to call them hoverboards. Can we call them like electronic balance boards?
They don't hover.
That would be a better.
The word hover means to hover, and they don't.
No, they feel.
Right. And then they explode. Why don't they call them explosion boards?
Yeah, blow up boards.
That sounds more exciting.
Yeah, this just happened this week,
yeah.
didn't it? A family plugged
Another
it into to charge it,
yep.
and it caught fire and caught the curtains on fire. And
it's terrible.
I know.
It's awful.
Yeah, this is definitely the reason why you want to make sure that you buy a quote unquote hoverboard with certified lithium ion batteries. If you're buying the really inexpensive ones, obviously you're getting a great deal, but you do that at risk of buying an inexpensive and quickly made product, which means there may not have been a lot of time for quality control testing. So so just be careful, you know, be careful with your wallet because, A, you don't, you know, if you're going to buy one of those, they are still an investment, even if you buy a cheaper one at a few hundred dollars.
Just get a 3D printer instead.
Yeah, just get a 3D printer and make your own.
All right, and you can go to CNET.com because they have tons of information on hoverboards and the dangers of it. And tomorrow daily, you can check that out with Ashley Esqueda at CNET.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks,
bye, guys.
Ashley. Take care. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll check in with Steve in the newsroom, and then more show coming your way after that. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's hard to imagine, but it's been 20 years since Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was apprehended. His brother David Kaczynski has written a book, Every Last Tie, The Story of the Unabomber and His Family, and he joins us now to talk about that book and his life. Hi, David. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
We're looking at some pictures of your family. What a nice-looking family, the Kaczynski family, back in 1952. Now, you're the younger brother of Ted Kaczynski, correct?
Yes, Ted is 7.5 years older than me.
All right, that's a significant age. They always say if it's more than 2 years, it's almost like you're an only child.
Yeah, yeah. When you remember your childhood, David, were there any telltale signs? I know your brother was considered something of a genius during his scholastic career, but what do you remember when you think back to those childhood days?
You know, I was very fortunate to grow up in the family I grew up in. Mom and Dad were just loving parents. I had an older brother who was kind to me, and a wonderful community, good school, safe community. It looked like the future was limitless for us. Ted was a little different, though. Mostly we thought he was different because he was so bright, so intelligent. I think his IQ was measured well into genius level at 165 at one point. But there were times when I asked Mom and Dad, well, why does Ted not have any friends? And Mom had a theory about that, and her theory was that when Teddy was 9 months old, he'd been hospitalized for a couple of weeks, and in those days, hospitals weren't very welcoming to families, and they could only visit every other day for 2 hours. And Mom thought that Teddy felt abandoned, that he was really traumatized by that, and that he never fully recovered. Anyway, that was Mom's explanation.
I've also read, too, that, you know, kids in the autism spectrum don't have a lot of friends. They don't have a lot of social skills, yet very, very, very intelligent. Anything like that come up? Because I know that you dealt with, was it a psychiatrist or someone who helped with the book?
Yes. Well, it's interesting you mentioned autism. When Ted was a little boy, Mom actually took him to a clinic at the University of Chicago, run by Bruno Bettelheim, who was a very prominent researcher in the field of autism. Mom felt that the clinic wasn't, you know, it was sort of harsh in some way. She didn't really care for it. But she would also always point out that Ted seemed to play more by himself alongside other children rather than with other children, and that is a little bit like features of autism.
Yes.
Now later on, Ted was eventually diagnosed with schizophrenia, which is a very, very serious delusional illness where you imagine, you know, you get confused about what reality is.
Did they seem concerned, as far as you remember, David? Did your parents feel concerned for Ted?
Mom, definitely so. And I think they thought that his ticket to success in life, but also to acceptance by other people, was his intelligence. So he went through school very quickly. He graduated from Evergreen Park Community High School at the age of 16. He got a scholarship to Harvard. And I think Mom thought, well, if he's around other very, very intelligent people, he'll have a better social life. But actually the opposite happened. If anything, he was extremely isolated once he left home.
And you'd think, you know, birds of a feather. So, yes, some intelligent kids would, you know, he would click and maybe find his groove going to a place where people were much like him. But evidently that didn't happen. It's been 20 years since the arrest of Ted Kaczynski. Unabomber, I have a question why it's spelled like that. When we first heard this Unabomber, I would have thought it was U-N-I bomber, but no, it's U-N-A.
Yes, and the A comes, well, the U-N comes from university. The A was the FBI's way of relating to airlines. An early bomb was actually placed on an airplane. It had a special altimeter or something so that it was going to go off when the airplane got to a certain height. Fortunately, that bomb malfunctioned. Otherwise, a couple of hundred people might have been killed.
Ugh.
It's just absolutely chilling to me to imagine that my older brother could have been responsible for such horrible crimes. Such
and you thwarted case. That, basically, after, was it... In the he sent your brother Ted sent a series of mail bombs, killing three, injuring dozens, and then it was you that read the Unabomber's manifesto, and it kind of clicked, didn't it?
Well, yeah. Although one of the reasons I wrote the book is to acknowledge my wife's role. Linda and I met in Evergreen Park in school at the age of 11, and we're very happily married.
Elementary school sweethearts. That really goes far back.
Yeah. But Linda was actually the first one to suspect Ted, and when she mentioned You know, do you think, Dave, there's any chance your brother could be this Unabomber that everybody's talking about? I thought, why is she even saying this? And we knew Ted had psychological problems. We'd actually sought some advice on how to help Ted with his mental illness, but I never had seen Ted violent. And so, you know, this is my brother she's talking about, and at that point she said, well, Dave, if this manifesto was ever published in the paper, the Unabomber had sent a manifesto to the Washington Post, would you at least read it and tell me what you think? And it was actually reading the manifesto that began to really help me wrap my mind around this horrific possibility that my own brother could be the most wanted person in America.
David, we'd like to discuss this with you further. Are you okay on time? Can we take a quick break?
Sure, that's fine.
David Kaczynski is here. His new book, Every Last Tie, The Story of the Unabomber and His Family. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Our guest is David Kaczynski. He is the brother of Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. David's new book, Every Last Tie, The Story of the Unabomber and His Family. David, as you're well aware, Ted seemed to have a major beef with technology. He wrote about it, was not happy with the advancement of technology. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I think with Ted, it was he could only see the world in terms of black and white. So for him, he could only see the downside of technology. And, of course, there is a downside: pollution. There's, you know, issues with technology. He could not see the positive side of it. And I think it became a consuming obsession for him. Partly it was a matter of technology. I know, in some sense, I think it was really his isolation from other human beings. He ended up living a little cabin in Montana, presumably to get away from technology. But I think it was really because his mental illness prevented him from keeping and knowing how to negotiate relationships with other people.
David, you had mentioned that it was your elementary school sweetheart, your wife, that saw the manifesto and kind of said, wow, please, David, give this a look-see and see if it has anything to do with maybe your brother. Then you were kind of convinced. You called the authorities. What a tough decision. And people go through it, and people bring these things up all the time. Like, what would you do if a family member did it? You have obviously no regrets for saving many, many lives.
Well, you know, when Ted was arrested in his little cabin in Montana, they found another bomb wrapped, apparently ready to be mailed to someone. Any doubts I might have had about, you know, what we were doing and turning Ted in vanished at that moment. I realized, you know, we had saved lives. But it is a very difficult dilemma, and sometimes when I go to schools and talk to school children, I really try to stress this issue of being responsible. You know, it's sort of easy to turn your head and look the other way, particularly when the stakes are really high. Here's my own family member. You know, and we face this dilemma, and we thought, well, gee, if we don't do anything, somebody else might get killed. You know, how could we live with ourselves? On the other hand, because of the death penalty, there was also a chance my brother might die if we turned him in. And I think the one thing we knew we could do is stop the violence, and we had to start there. And then, of course, we advocated for Ted, based on his mental illness, that his life be spared as well.
Do you, David, right now, is there any kind of a relationship between you and Ted? Do you talk to him at all?
I wish I could. He's in the federal supermax. He'll be there for the rest of his life. He has life without parole. And that's a sentence Mom and I could live with. I would visit him. He won't put me on a list. He doesn't answer our letters. In some sense, I think Ted is in two prisons at the same time. One is the physical prison where he's going to spend the rest of his life, but perhaps the harsher prison is this prison of mental illness. You know, it's very strange for me to think, you know, what happened to my brother? We loved each other, and now it's like we're worlds apart.
In January 1998, Ted Kaczynski attempted suicide as he prepared to go on trial. He didn't want his lawyers to use an insanity defense. Is that true? And he wanted to represent himself?
Yes. For Ted Kaczynski, I mean, the one thing that he had was his brilliant mind. It's the one thing he had going for him. And I think for him, in his way of thinking, it was a fate worse than death to be described to the world as mentally ill. And I think that's partly because Ted is mentally ill, but part of it is because there is this tremendous stigma. We look at people with mental illness as if they were aliens or something.
Right.
But in fact, most families, many, many families, deal with issues of mental illness, and treatments are available. People can be helped.
And people are now talking about it, but, you know, they weren't before.
Pardon me?
People are now talking about mental illness a little more freely than they were before, which helps everyone.
Yes, I think that's such a good... I mean, I think there have been some really positive changes, and we now have treatments that are that can genuinely help people and help their families. I think we still need to work on making those treatments more available, more affordable, especially in lower-income communities. But it's a huge issue, and I'm glad we're finally beginning to pay some attention to it.
David, I don't know if it happens to you as often as it once did, but I imagine you probably have a couple of episodes a day where somebody hears your name. Maybe you're buying something with a credit card, or your name is called in a restaurant, and somebody hears that name and asks you very quickly if you're related to Ted. What is that transaction like when you talk to somebody like that?
Yeah, it happens less often than it used to. It's sort of odd. It's kind of like, you know, my life has been defined by this, by something that my brother did. And, you know, I think Linda and I have done our best to be responsible, to stop the violence, to try to advocate for improvements in the mental health system. But it's a shadow. It haunts me. And I guess ashamed would be the word of what my brother has done, and only hope that at some point, some way, he begins to understand and ask for forgiveness.
Sure.
David Kaczynski on the line with us. His brother is the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, and you can read the book Every Last Tie, The Story of the Unabomber and His Family. It's highly personal. It's a powerful memoir. It really, I'm dying to read it. I have to be honest with you, David. If you could talk to your brother right now, if he would open the lines of communication, what would be the first thing you'd say to him? Would you say, I'm sorry?
You know, I don't think I would. I would tell him that I love him because I do love him. I would also make it clear that I really despise what he's done. But he isn't the same. He did what he did because he was sick. And I will always remember the kind older brother he was to me when he was a child. And that's the Ted I hold in his heart, in my heart. And I know that's the person that's in him somewhere, perhaps buried in those delusions.
It's a beautiful sentiment, actually, that you a boy who loves his brother. I have to ask you a final question, David. As you mentioned, federal investigators arrested Ted Kaczynski at his cabin. We saw the images, the bearded, disheveled Ted Kaczynski. But the sketch that was going around looked nothing like him. It looked, honestly, like Weird Al Yankovic wearing a hoodie. There was... Did you think at all that sketch...
Funny, you know, when I read the manifesto, I thought it could be Ted. And then I looked at the sketch, and, you know, they had some psychological profile. And, you know, we still have a long way to go in, you know, in this profiling stuff, because they thought it was someone 10 years younger than Ted at the time, and someone maybe from a blue-collar job. Ted had been a college professor. It was kind of a roller coaster, kind of going back and forth. The manifesto sounded so much like him, but, you know, the other clues didn't seem to fit. But eventually I got to the point of telling Linda, you know, I think it might be a 50-50 chance, and that was too much of a risk for us to take.
The story is amazing. David Kaczynski writes it in his book, Every Last Tie, the story of the Unabomber and his family. David, we appreciate you being here. Good luck in the future.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Again, David Kaczynski and the book, Every Last Tie, the story of the Unabomber and his family, available wherever books are sold. We'll take a break, and then we'll get to news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Work it, make it, do it. Makes us harder, better, faster, stronger. That don't kill me. Can only make us stronger. I need you to hurry up, man. Because I can't wait much longer. This is like the old WGN. If you turn on Wally, you'd oftentimes hear a song like a Kanye West song. And then he'd give away a dinner to Mikasa Tsukasa.
I have to tell you, I don't necessarily mind that song.
No. Oh, you like that? Do you enjoy that?
It doesn't bother me. He bothers me.
Yeah. Earlier in the
Stick
show,
to your music.
We were talking about Kanye West. If you saw the Grammys last night, you saw Taylor Swift accepting an award. And during her speech, she kind of took a shot at Kanye West because Kanye has maintained that without him, he uses much more flowery language than I just did, but she would not be as famous, that him going up and interrupting her was a turning point by which America then accepted her, and that is not the case. But now it gets better. I alluded to this earlier, but I have found the series of tweets. Kanye West is now complaining, and it comes off of a weird period for him. I don't know if you remember, but he declared Bill Cosby innocent a very short time ago. He just, because he's Kanye West, he believes that when he says something, it's gospel, and it's not always. Here's a series of tweets from Kanye West. Now, at this point, what he's doing is, if you didn't hear our segment earlier, he's explaining that the white media should not be able to comment on black music, that they don't understand black music, and because of that, they should not comment. Here's one of the tweets. There's a series of about five or six of them. He starts out by saying this: to Pitchfork, Rolling Stone, and the New York Times, and any other white publication, please do not comment on black music anymore. He then goes on to tweet a little while later, I love, love, love white people, but you don't understand what it means to be the great-grandson of ex-slaves and make it this far.
Do we know that for sure? Or like his people, his race before him? Or is he saying a family member?
He has on occasion made the declaration that he is the descendant of slaves. And because of that, and actually he's also said that he feels many times that the world is still treating him like a slave.
What? Does he know what slavery is?
See, that's one of the problems, I think, with Kanye West, because... Now, none of us were around during the slave trading days. All I know is what I've read in books and seen on television and in movies, but I don't think the way Kanye West is treated is comparable to the way that slaves were treated. I don't think.
Did slaves have their own money to buy their own food? Did they have freedom? Could they do what they want when they wanted?
No.
Could they marry a white woman with a big ass?
They were... No. They were treated like animals.
How in the world does...
I don't know. Keep in mind, it's...
Why are we listening when he says something?
Kanye West.
He says Cosby's innocent. Why are we listening to him?
I don't know. He then goes on to say, this is all through his Twitter account, by the way, the system is designed for colored people to fail, and one of our only voices is music. One is our only way out is music. He then goes on to say, my album will never, never, never be on Apple, and it will never be for sale. You can only get it on Tidal.
Because you don't need the money. If you needed the money, it would be on Apple.
Yeah. And then finally, please to all my friends and fans and music lovers, sign up to Tidal today. He's got he's got a tremendous fan base. And I've heard people who know way more about music than I do explain to me, I've heard the word genius used, and I'm not sure it's applicable to Kanye West. I'm not positive he's a genius. I know he does things to get attention, and I know that's part of the game, but I don't think it's fair to say if you're commenting on music and you're white, you have to stop it because you don't understand my music. I think if the roles were reversed And a white artist said, hey, if you're a black publication, you're not going to understand the music that I'm putting out, so don't even try. Don't comment on it. Doesn't make sense.
You know, if white people didn't pay attention to black people's music and couldn't comment on it, we wouldn't really have rock and roll.
We wouldn't have Elvis Presley. We wouldn't have Pat Boone.
But I'm Chuck Berry, I'm saying when he did the music,
I know.
He, you know, was, the spinoff of that was rock and roll.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, you, oh boy, I had to edit myself right there. He just gets me so mad. Just, and if he is a genius, you know who I think is a genius? Prince.
Prince is a genius.
Prince has done such right. innovative, creative stuff.
Now, Wendy, you can't comment on Prince's music.
See,
Kanye West will not allow you to comment on his music, so please do not. Save yourself the breath.
And oh God, I just turned into Rokan when he does that, but I'm truly speechless. And as a listener pointed out earlier, then his wife can't comment on his music because she's right. white.
You can't ask your wife. You can't play a couple of chords for your wife and go, what do you think about that? She will not be able to understand your music.
What in God's name is happening to this world?
It's upsetting. And it's so unfair to pull out the slave card and say, again, that tweet was, I love, love, love white people, but you don't understand what it means to be the great grandson of ex-slaves and make it this far. That is beyond unfortunate. That episode in history is cataclysmically awful, but that's not fair to bring that into the music. The music is not based on the fact that he may or may not be the ancestor of slaves. You can't do that. That's not fair.
I'm not even mad at him anymore. I'm concerned for him. I would like to counsel him. I would like to get him help. Because he's going off the deep end.
I think he is going off the deep end. All right, we'll take a quick break. If you want to jump in on this, we're at 312-981-7200. That's the phone line and the text line. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Now I ain't saying she a gold digger.
All right, I love this song. Sorry. I'm a Kanye fan.
Won
Say
you
whatever
back over?
You want.
All right. Wendy loves Kanye West, but she's concerned for his well-being. Why? In a series of tweets, Kanye West suggests that white publications like Pitchfork or Rolling Stone or the New York Times cannot comment on his music. They do not understand his music. He is the great-grandson of ex-slaves. He has made it very, very far, and it's not responsible for white publications to comment on music they do not understand like his.
Dave wants to jump in on this. Dave, what do you got for us?
I'm going to throw three things into the mix for you. Try this off for a side. Don't forget that Kanye West also said he was going to run for president in 2020. And second, Donald Trump said he was going to vote for him. And I got to put something into this whole mix as well. My family has been in this country, both sides, since the early 1600s. I have a receipt for a sale of a slave that was bought by the family back in 1839.
That is weird, and I wouldn't know what to do with it. I mean, it's history. You can't change history. But yep. I would feel so uncomfortable and so weirded out by it, yet be so intrigued by it. What a mixed bag of emotions.
I was intrigued enough. My mother was going to throw it away, and I said, no, that is history. You don't throw it away. The same as you cannot throw away the minstrel music from the 1910s and so forth that were recorded.
Premenstrual music?
No, minstrel music.
Oh, I thought you minstrel said premenstrual music.
Yeah, which degraded the... which degraded blacks, period, and anybody else they could put out. But at the same time, that's all our history. We have to live with it. We have to realize it, and we have to move forward and be regular, positive human beings about it with compassion.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I forgot he was running for president.
I just thought of a phrase. Those who don't understand history are doomed to repeat it. I just made that up just now. I hope it rings true.
You are a bigger genius than Ted Kaczynski was.
Thank you. I ask questioningly.
Is this Dimitri? Hi.
Yeah, this is Dimitri. How you doing?
All right, we're talking Kanye. Talk to us.
I'm talking Kanye as well, and I just tuned into your station and hear you guys say you went off the deep end. But before I go further, I want to second what the guy's saying. We do need to move forward because of our history, but you can't move forward when you have the Emmys not nominating black. They don't understand it. They don't have black people in to filter out what's good black music. I don't think he's went off the deep end at all. I think you probably have to understand where blacks come from and how music come from in order for you to make that assessment. I think you're totally wrong when you say that. He's went off the deep end. It totally correlates. It does correlate to how you're treating blacks. Blacks have no distributions. We have nothing in regard to music to put out anything for us.
Yeah, but you got people like Kanye who have their own record label and are trying to help their brethren. And really, if we couldn't comment on black music, rock and roll wouldn't have happened, because when Chuck Berry did it, I want to say, God, that guy could rock.
Well, that's not true, because Elvis actually paid, I don't know, dirt cheap, because blacks weren't able to put the money out then. So you all capitalized off our demise regardless, even still to this day. So, of course, he says this because he's in position to say it. Someone like myself that doesn't have the position he has couldn't say it. And I think he's speaking for a lot of other folks. I'll hang up and listen.
Wait, Dimitri, hold on one second.
This is interesting, Dimitri.
Do you think it's fair, though, for him to pull out the fact? And I don't know his lineage. I'll take his word for it that he's the great-grandson of ex-slaves. But do you think that that's fair to throw that?
We all are the great-grandsons of ex-slaves, including you guys. All of us are. Everybody's mixed. Everybody's a mutt. Nobody's really pure. But I do think it's fair if they can say it. I mean, just for instance, you have a Jew card you can use all the time that says you can be an anti-Semite if you say something about a particular Jewish person. So, yes, he can say it. What a person says isn't necessarily fairness. It's the depth in which you have to go into what he's saying and why he's saying it. And I don't think you all actually can correlate to that, because, of course, you guys aren't black. When she makes the statement, oh, I want to counsel him, and I want to know, ma'am, really?
No,
really?
Listen, Dimitri, I'm serious. Since his mother passed away, he has said some crazy things. I think he is, not just with this, with everything he's been doing.
You're absolutely correct. Since his mom has passed away, he has been a bit over the edge a bit, but he has to be edgy in order, like your other host said, he has to be edgy in order to get the attention to draw it to this. Now, if you can filter that out and see, well, all right, well, he's doing this because he wants to highlight this, then you understand, and I'm telling you, it's more complicated than you guys are letting on. You guys are looking like he's saying, oh, well, you know what, all white people, this is girl is white.
I know, that's what we mentioned, and I love that tune Gold Digger that we came back with. Why can't I say that I love that?
Well, because the Gold Digger term in relative, it talked about Kanye. He did exactly what he spoke about. You get that? You get all this money, then you go give it to a white girl. That's exactly what he did.
Yeah. But Dimitri, to your point, like if I were to say, now I had relatives that escaped countries that because of the Nazis. Nazis were taking over these countries, and I had relatives that escaped. If I did a segment on the show with Wendy and it didn't go well, could I realistically say, well, yeah, but I had relatives that were fleeing the Nazis generations ago, so of course that segment didn't go well. That wouldn't be a valid excuse, would it?
That wouldn't be a valid excuse, but also just think about everything the Jews went through. Everything that they went through, all of them, like around the world, everything, everybody despised and everything they went through. When you do have a certain section or element of it that you're discussing that doesn't go necessarily the Jewish way, they still can hop on it because they say, well, you know what, you're a Semite, even though it might not be fair, that's life. I do want to say this before I hang up. Want to say this. How do you guys feel about the Emmy nominations, music, and both the movies in which the blacks are, once again, I mean, BET isn't owned by African Americans, not owned by black. Bob Johnson been sold it. We don't have nothing that covers that. What do you think about the non-nomination? Nobody got the major nomination. Taylor Swift. I'm going to just get right to the point. Mm-hmm. I mean, us, those of us that send a note as black, we don't think she can sing one lick, one iota. What is it that you all feel about that?
That's a matter of opinion, though. Come on, no, Dimitri.
No, ma'am. I said those of us that are black that are in the know. You're not black. That's the reason I said it. I had to put that in there so you can see. But what do you think about the non-nominations that they're not getting? This is his point. Why are we not nominated and we're the purveyors of music? We're the ones that do all of it. We're the rhythmic race. How are we not getting nominated for nothing? At least nominate us and say, well, we're not going to let you win. We're not even getting nominated. And you wonder why he has a certain disdain. And then for you guys to come out and say, well, why is he mad?
Kendrick Lamar won how many awards and was nominated for how many? Didn't he win like 5 or 6 times last night?
Yeah, but he didn't read it. He didn't get the major. You know about the awards. Those are all just little side awards. He didn't get the major one he's supposed to get. And what's crazy about white people is, how can you all point out the fact that he's upset or he has a certain disdain for something?
How could you be mad that he's mad? I don't understand that.
You know what I'm mad about? That Natalie Cole didn't get any kind of tribute in the memoriam thing.
So is her family, by the way.
And they should
be.
Well, they should have been, but you got to realize who's doing the assessing of the music. Let's go back to my point again. It's all white people that's doing the assessing of the music. The reason why Natalie King, she's the king. Everybody knows that. How can you not even mention or give her something?
She got a mention.
She got a quick little mention, but not like tributes
not
like
we're,
David
we're
Bowie and
we agree.
Glenn Frey.
We agree.
And B.B. King.
You know, they sold Natalie King. They sold her short, and I just think she was a little bit more deserving besides a mention. And I wish you guys can just look at it in a different element of why these blacks are still an African American, whatever name you put it, why they feel this way. We're upset that you're upset that we're upset.
Dimitri, I'm upset that you're blaming us for everything, too.
Well, who else do we point the blame to when over a period of history of time, whenever we tried to relegate ourselves under your umbrella and say, well, I'm going to work my way up like you say, and yet and still we get shot down over and over, and one of us get in, and the one that get in go marry Kim Kardashian. And he's the only one that can be our voice. You wonder why we are upset and we would throw this sponsor again.
Well, be mad at him then. Don't be mad at me.
Well, I'm not upset at you. You don't have a record business. You don't have a record distribution.
How
That's
do you
true.
Know?
No, you don't. I know you don't. Dimitri, I know
I would
we,
sign you if I did, Dimitri, because I like your spunk.
I know we agreed on some things and we disagreed on some things, but we're thrilled that you called and that you're listening. Thank you for that.
I appreciate it. I'm a fan of your show now. I'm going to stay listening to you. I'm a first-time listener and first-time caller, but
well,
I'll
thank
be
you.
Listening thank
Welcome
you,
aboard.
Yeah, we do appreciate it. Take care. All right.
Awesome.
All right. We have to break. Steve will be in just a little bit with the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Tim, thanks very much. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy for part two of our show. Jump in at any time, 312-981-7200. We would love to hear from you. It's been very interesting to watch the wheels spin. During the hour break, during the Wintrust Business Lunch, we obtained a guest that will be by on the show later on. Kevin was working behind the scenes diligently to have this guest on, and it's fun to watch
Me
your reaction
out?
To this. Yes.
I am totally
yes.
geeking out. Eric Burdon, ladies and gentlemen.
Rock and roll legend Eric Burdon will be joining us at some point during the show.
The Animals, War, Solo, everything.
Yeah,
he's
in
a
good one.
205. And I didn't know. I know that we were working on this, and I don't have an album for him to autograph.
Which is a weird thing, because normally, on any given day, you have an Eric Burdon album with you, and today, the day he's on the show, you didn't bring one.
No, you know how you got a guy who has a trench coat, and he opens it up, and there are various types of watches?
Sure, normally.
Usually, I'm like that with albums.
That's correct.
Do not have that today.
Not
didn't
today.
Wear the trench coat. It was a little chilly.
So the paces that you went through to make that happen, we were marveling in the audience in the
drink much?
No.
Yeah, right.
In the audience,
Kevin,
we were
it's
marveling.
Happened. I gotta
now
tell
I've
you,
been jinxed.
Bar Louie has dropped off some martinis, and Bill claims he's never been drunk. And I said, really? Because sometimes I've seen you buzzed, and I'll fully admit it, I am.
Oh, when they started pouring it, you got drunk.
Okay.
But I have never been drunk. I will never be drunk. And then everything I'd say, good, bad, or indifferent, you'd turn to Kevin and you go, is this guy drunk or what? I was just being me.
I know. Hanging with you is a party all the time.
Yes, it is.
And you don't need alcohol.
Yes, it is. True.
And your stand-up was great, too. You didn't have to be dirty. You're really an all-around good fellow.
Nice,
I
dude.
Love you, man.
All right, see what I mean? This is what I mean.
I love you, man.
So then what happens is you call home to have a family member or two deliver an Eric Burdon album to you. So you can
they're
signed.
Looking for one. I have at least an Animals Best Of. I know I have Eric Burdon something or other. Mm-hmm. I know I have CDs. It's just, you know what? No one plays albums except my 16-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And even CDs no one plays anymore. You just pop it up on the old computer, call it up, as you say.
But you have them somewhere in your home. You keep them in a closet or on a shelf somewhere, don't you?
There are thousands of albums in the basement, and they're not really in any kind of alphabetized order. So
they're just random?
At this point.
Wow. Wow.
They used to be in alphabetical order, and then we moved things from, you know, we had so many CDs. It was like a radio station, and then we said, well, put them in the basement because really... Who needs CDs anymore?
Correct.
And I think, you know, you start moving the A's, the B's, and then you're like, let's just move them all.
I
you
get
know what
it.
I mean?
I do get it. Yeah, I do.
So Bar Louie has dropped off a couple of things, and the reason I mention this is because, A, it's delicious. They had a portobello burger, a burger.
Right. made of hamburger, right?
A bruschetta, pomodoro, which was really awesome, a California chicken club, Tuscan chicken pasta, barbecue ranch salad, which was pretty amazing, and a couple of martinis, the Diva for Bill and the Clover for me.
Right. Both of them outstanding. At some point during the show, we will give you the chance to win an outstanding gift package from them over at Bar Louie's.
Well, that's why I bring this up, because, you know, we have this thing that if we're having lunch, you know, big deal, we got an hour break in between. If we're having lunch, what do the listeners care if we have lunch?
Right.
And what do they care what we ate? Well, they care if they get something.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to just tell you that Bar Louie, there are, I believe they said 17 locations. There's two on Dearborn. I've been to one of those. There's one in Naperville. I've been there. There's one in Evanston.
I've been there. One several times.
And there are 14 other ones. And every Monday through Friday from 4 to 7, half-price flatbreads and select apps.
On Tuesday, burger night, any burger $1. That's from 5 o'clock till closing. That's not a bad value.
And if you want to talk about Louie Loves such and such, it's like Louie Loves dot, 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 you can actually book a party,
mm-hmm.
and 20% of the sales is donated to your specific organization. If you have an organization that you care about, 20% of the sales for that party will be donated. And you know what's weird?
What?
We have two parties to give away.
Let's do this. This is a party. Am I getting this right? For 10 people? Yeah. That's tremendous. All right. So you would win, potentially, a party for 10 people at the Bar Louie of your choice.
Potentially.
Well, sadly, not everyone's going to win. No, I'm saying everyone could find 9 other people to have a good time with.
Ask Bill to come. He likes to booze it up.
I would show up. I'm not going to say I'm not going to show up. 312-981-7200.
Pick the numbers.
Let's say there's no significance to these numbers whatsoever, Wendy. I'm just choosing them at random. Caller 17, caller 23. If you're caller 17 or caller 23 at 312-981-7200, you and 9 friends or acquaintances, they don't have to be friends of yours. Maybe you just met them once or twice. Go to Bar Louie's. You'll become much better friends. Call now.
How about that? 2 parties of 10.
That's valuable.
I'm telling you, man, why someone is not sponsoring this lunchtime little fiasco.
Doesn't make sense.
I meant to say fiesta. I said fiasco.
Either will work. So again, on today's show, let's review. Eric Burden of the Animals is showing up. 2 hunky rugby players will be on the show.
Oh, my God.
And we already had the Unabomber's brother. That's a blueprint for success. You get a little bit of everything. That's the sampler platter.
It absolutely is, and we need to congratulate Jerry from Michigan City, Indiana. He's going to come in. There are a bunch of different locations, and you can go to Bar Louie, and you will get a party for 10. That's what you're getting, Jerry.
It seems too good to believe.
And Michael from Schaumburg, and I'm betting you there's one in or near the Schaumburg area.
I'm positive.
Michael from Schaumburg is also going to get a party for himself and 9 of his friends at Bar Louie. Special thanks to them. Eat, drink, be happy, and look at all the Bar Louie things that they have to offer. Some really wonderful items on their menu.
Mm-hmm.
And lovely martinis.
Mm-hmm. Go on. Try it again.
Martinis?
That's right. All right. We'll take a quick break. When we return, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. You know, about a year and a half or 2 years ago, if somebody said the name Ronda Rousey to you, you might not know who that was. Agreed?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how she became, like, she quickly turned into an almost household word. And for people who don't know who that is, Ronda Rousey is considered to be the best woman fighter on the planet, although she just lost a huge championship match in November.
To Holly Holm. She got knocked out, didn't she?
She got knocked out by Holly Holm. Everybody favored Ronda Rousey in this fight, and she's telling Ellen DeGeneres, and I don't know if this aired, it must have aired yesterday or it will air today. No, it was taped yesterday and it will air today. She's telling Ellen DeGeneres that she considered, and this is awful, she considered killing herself after her loss to Holly Holm. Here's what she says. This is according to Huffington Post, who took transcripts from the Ellen interview. This is Ronda Rousey speaking. I was literally sitting there and thinking about killing myself at that exact second. I'm like, I'm nothing. What do I do anymore? No one gives a blank about me anymore without this. She was, there were several polls last year. I'm trying to remember where exactly I read them. I want to say Sports Illustrated, but I might be wrong. She was considered to be the most dominant athlete in her sport, of any sport. And I'm not singling out women. I'm just saying of any athlete playing any sport, she was considered to be the most dominant when it came to fighting. Well, yeah. Is it? I'm trying to remember how they bracket the sport. It's boxing, but it's like a... It's more than just boxing.
She's not mixed martial arts, is she? Is she really? Because she was going to fight Floyd Mayweather. I remember that whole thing.
Well, she didn't want to fight. She says she's been offered huge, huge paydays to fight guys like Mayweather, and she doesn't want to do it because she says it's a weird dynamic for people to go to a fight and cheer on a man hitting a woman. She's saying, I'm not afraid. I just don't think it's normal for people in an arena to be chanting or screaming or shouting that a man should be hitting a woman. That's uncomfortable.
I know, but it's for the sake of the sport. It's not like he's beating a woman. There are women who want to play professional football or basketball, and there are certainly girls in high school levels that want to play with the guys and be treated as an equal.
Yeah.
So to me, that was kind of wrong, her feeling on that. You're not going to, you know, cheer for a guy hitting a woman because that's what boxing is.
Yeah.
I didn't realize she was mixed martial arts, MMA.
There are a lot in what I've seen, in footage that I've seen, and even in this championship fight.
RondaMMA.com is her website, mixed martial artist.
So they're allowed, they can kick and stuff, right?
And it's bite not, and pull hair.
Can they bite and pull hair?
No.
I don't know if they can. Can
no,
they?
They can't.
But how serious is that? I mean, it's a sport, so take it for what it's worth. But when you lose a match like this, this was a world championship match, and she just thought about ending herself because she didn't win. I'm competitive, but I would never in a million years think to myself, well, I lost something. I've got to kill myself.
Well, this comes into that whole, I don't know what it's called, when the brain damage of people in sports.
Yeah.
Because seriously, you get hit a lot in mixed martial arts.
I would imagine.
Kicked, hit, punched in the head.
Yeah.
And, you think football players get it?
It's got to be
absolutely
compounded
with,
even more with fighters.
Look at Muhammad Ali.
Well, although it's technically Parkinson's.
Yeah, but I
it's
wonder.
It's aggravated by the fact that he was punched repeatedly in the head. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, if you're not in your right mind and you're, look at Dave Duerson. I mean, he took his own life. It doesn't seem odd to me that Ronda Rousey would consider that. And then just this hyped up thing. She was really in the favorable place to win.
Oh, yeah.
And to get knocked out. Wow.
Heavy favorite. Now, several people have alluded, and this has come up because of the O.J. Simpson miniseries that we've talked about a couple times.
Tonight's the night.
People have wondered. Yeah, episode three is tonight. People have wondered if possibly some of O.J. Simpson's behavior could have been altered for the same reason. You know, due to the stress of being repeatedly hit over the years.
You can only blame so much
on
things.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I just read over the weekend that Joe Namath is the latest name of former football players to say, I would like to donate my brain to medical science when I'm no longer alive so they can study it and see what the long-term effects are. I think at this point they kind of have enough evidence to determine.
I don't.
That you don't think so?
No, I think they're still totally studying that. I just want to know if he's going to donate his pantyhose and high heels.
He has not commented on that.
I was going to say, if you ever needed evidence.
Right, that could be your evidence right there.
But I don't think they know enough. I think, you know, and the big thing that they're trying to do now is figure this out before people die.
But at the basic, at the crux of this, they know that repeated trauma from being hit over and over again cannot be good for you in any way, shape, or form. I mean, that they already know that, right? So I don't know what exactly they're studying. I guess they're studying to figure out ways to prevent it, which is a good thing. But if you're in one of those sports where you're going to get hit over and over again, I don't know what you do to prevent it. That's part of the game of football. I can't remember who said, somebody said the biggest problem with football is the game itself. Like in other things where this happens, it's not the game. Like in hockey, if you look at the head injuries, it's from fighting and pushing into the boards. But in football, just the way the game is structured, they're going to constantly collide. That's what football is.
Like two bucking Broncos heading right to each other head to head.
Yeah.
And this just came up ABC News a couple of hours ago. WWE star Daniel Bryan is retiring after suffering concussion-related seizures. A former WWE wrestling star Daniel Bryan speaking out about why he retired at the age of 34. Bryan, along with his wife and fellow WWE, that is so hard to say.
A lot of W's.
WWE star Brie Bella told ABC News that he started to suffer seizures after concussions, leading to his decision to quit wrestling. So where is this going to come up where it isn't affecting people?
I don't know.
We have these rugby players coming on later on, Tommy Bowe and Ryan Crotty. And are they scared? I think the fact that they're not wearing helmets, Bertrand, was that you that said that earlier? That, you know, if we resorted back to that, where football players didn't wear helmets, they wouldn't hit as hard?
Maybe, or hit with their head.
Yeah. They're pretty interesting, and I wonder if they're worried about that, because every sport now is coming under fire for this.
I can't remember the player's name, but there was a story 2 weeks ago about a top, one of the top recruited players. He was ready for the NFL draft, and he just pulled out saying, you know, he's looked at the evidence and he doesn't want to play pro football anymore. And this was a kid with a pretty bright future, and he wasn't the first one to do that. I think you're going to start to see that a little bit more often.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we got the rugby guys in coming up next, so we'll talk to them about that. I'm pretty curious to see if there's even any thought in their head about that at all.
Sure, there'd have to be, right?
Come on, you're a professional athlete. You don't want to think about the bad side of it. You just want to play the game and have people love you.
You would imagine. All right, we'll take a break. Steve with the news. And then hunky rugby players. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill, I have to laugh right now because Kevin Richter, our producer, does the show rundown every day.
Correct.
And maybe the guys in the studio can read the very top of this page. What does it say up there for 135? Rugby hunks.
Rugby hunks. That's the three of you. You all qualify as rugby hunks.
Well, what do you think?
I think, Kevin, you're right. So the thumbs up on the assessment there. We have Tommy Bowe in the studio.
Yes.
How are you?
All good, thank you. Thanks. Nice to be here.
You're from Ireland, are you?
Yes, from Ireland.
My 16-year-old son, Michael, is going to Ireland for spring break. Is he going to love it? He's going with his school choir, not with rugby.
Really? Okay.
They're singing at
St. Where he's going?
Patrick's Cathedral
and
things
Dublin,
like that.
Yeah, yes. Very nice. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, he loves it. He loves it.
Ireland is beautiful?
Very nice place. Yeah, I don't know if he might not come back.
Oh.
And he's got red hair.
He's got to come back.
He looks like he fits right in.
We're sending him there to pick up Shamrock Shakes. We like him fresh, so he has to come back.
Okay, perfect. Well, then.
And who's Ryan Crotty? Ryan Crotty. You're from New Zealand.
Did right, yes.
Dude, right, yes?
Yes, ma'am. I am from New Zealand. Yeah.
I thought you called
Kiwi
me dude. That
absolutely.
Was awesome. You're a second 5/8 for the New Zealand All Blacks. What's second 5/8?
You seem taller than that. You seem
taller
much taller, yeah.
No, you don't have to be taller or short to play that position. No,
what does that? That's the position. That's what that refers to. So,
yeah, so that's back. So they're the fast, handsome looking ones. Not like the forwards up front. It's kind of,
those guys are hideous.
Yeah, Tommy, you're a wing. What do you say about the second 5/8?
We just call them a center. Makes it a lot easier. It makes it a lot easier. These Kiwis like to mix things up a little bit.
And Paul Lasike?
Yes.
Chicago Bears reserve running back and native New Zealander, former rugby player. You do not have a position listed. Are you not playing at this particular moment?
Yeah, no. I was with the Chicago Bears last season on the practice squad for the season. And so, you know, my connections, I was born and raised in New Zealand. Always been an All Black fan, obviously. I grew up wanting to be an All Black. And so to see them come into Chicago, into the home field, is going to be an exciting experience.
No offense to Tommy, but the All Black team is considered to be the world's team, right? That's the team that most of the world, not the entire world, but most of the world is rooting for, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, we're hoping
depends
Chicago not. I hope the Irish connections in Chicago will be turned out in green.
Yeah.
So the All Blacks are up against the USA Eagles November 4th at Toyota Park. That's in Bridgeview. New England will play Ireland on November 5th, what did I say?
No, New Zealand.
There's two New Zealand teams coming out. We've got a team, the New Zealand Māori,
and that's a native team to New Zealand. So they play in a few international fixtures throughout the year, and they're playing the USA at Toyota Park.
Okay, I gotcha.
This is a big deal. I mean, in the world of rugby, these are some major games, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It doesn't get. That's a pretty big. It's
as big as big gets.
The All Blacks in Ireland are two of the top teams in the world. So, it's pretty awesome to be able to bring the sport of rugby to Chicago.
Now, what are we getting it more? I mean, we really are finally starting to get the whole rugby thing, aren't we?
Yeah, it's
last year huge display. We had some other rugby players up, and people were calling in saying, you know, Bill, Wendy, how do you not know about rugby? It's making its name now, isn't it?
Yeah,
slowly but surely,
it's picking up, especially with now sevens rugby being in the Olympics. I think that's really kicked things into gear over here.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite funny. A lot of people we talked to didn't really know what was going on, but then they started to really enjoy the big hits and the fast running and the skill sets that the players are showcasing. So is there
like a basic primer to what we need to know, like how do you score points, what needs
Make
to
a
be
goal?
Done is that what it is are you yeah, scoring a goal in rugby?
It's a try.
Yeah.
It's like a touchdown in American football, except you have to touch the ball on the ground, so that's
you do.
A try, and you get 5 points for that.
Okay,
and then you get your kick a goal after that, a little
like
bit
an extra point.
Yeah, exactly. So you get 2 points for that. So if you score, you get 7 points then for that. And then for penalties, you get 3 points. So that's pretty much
that's all you need to know.
Yeah, nice. Pretty much it.
So if football and soccer had a baby, it would be rugby, pretty much, or no?
Yes.
kind of. Yeah, kind of.
And we'll no helmets. You guys don't wear helmets.
No
Do you have
helmets,
any?
No pads.
But now, are you guys concerned now with this whole NFL thing and all these athletes with the brain injuries? And a lot of people say it's because of the helmets, because they feel they can just run right into each other. Do you guys have any fear for not being helmeted up?
No, I guess if you're not helmeted up, you don't go leading in with your head, so
exactly.
You use your shoulders and things like that to tackle. Some guys still like to try and tackle with their heads, and it doesn't usually work out too well. But
unfortunately, sometimes you catch the odd elbow or knee on your head whenever you do time it wrong. But I think it's obviously the whole concussion thing is a massive talking point at the minute. But I suppose it's bringing a lot of awareness to it. So now the medical facilities and that sort of stuff has been really stepped up, which is great for the people who are playing.
And it's happened everywhere. It's not just football. We were talking earlier this morning about girls' soccer.
Right.
That, you know, hitting the ball, doing a header. What's it called when you do that?
Yeah, that's a header. Yeah. You hit the ball with your head. Yeah.
That has been causing some...
Really?
And, I mean, isn't that ball soft?
I mean, apparently not. I think soccer...
not soft
and
enough.
People have been heading balls for years.
Yeah.
So
you're not afraid. This
See, they're
scare
laughing
you.
At this, but
I know.
I kind of am, too.
I don't know if that's a bit of a... It doesn't sound too good on the radio, what I just said. But yeah, listen, I don't think that it's... I don't think it's something that has damaged people in the past, but of course it's something that maybe needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
Our news guy, Steve Bertrand, is up there, and he had said that earlier, like soccer's been played all over the country, mainly in other parts of the country, not here, for so many years, and there's been no issue, and now all of a sudden any sport can have this
of course.
Effect.
Yeah. To be as good as you guys are at the game of rugby, you probably started when you were 4 or 5 years old, didn't you?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, I was 4 or 5 years old when I started playing. Growing up in New Zealand, it's what you do. It's a part of our culture. I used to play in the morning and then go watch my dad play and then go down to the rugby club and play after
and
that.
And play more.
Yeah.
Was your dad a pro player or just for fun?
Dad played a lot of club stuff. He played to a semi-professional level, but I just, you know, grew up and wanted to be like him, so that's why I started playing rugby.
Could you tell at the ages of 4 or 5 that you guys had a little extra and you could make it as a professional player? Was it that obvious that young, or did that happen later?
For me in Ireland, I played rugby from a young age, but I played so many different sports.
Yeah.
We kind of have so many. We have a local sport, Gaelic football, hurling. We have soccer. We have everything.
What's the hurling again?
So it's where you run around with a stick and try and hit. It's like...
there's no pinata, Wendy. It's just a stick.
And
they don't know what they're doing.
You have a ball and you just try it. So it's kind of like...
Like lacrosse kind of? Or
kind
no?
of like lacrosse, except on a football pitch, yeah. So
yeah.
And you kind of hit it over the bar. We could be here all day trying to explain the rules of that one.
What's that little thing on ice? that you try and use the little brushes.
That's Scotland. That's curling. Curling.
Look,
yeah.
They're making fun of Scotland because they don't have a representative here from Scotland.
No, exactly. Scots, what are they at? That's not a sport. Only joking.
Baby could do that. Come on. That's easy. That's easy. What about, Paul, you're the best person to ask because you're playing two sports professionally right now. When you go back and forth between rugby and football, is that an easy transition or not?
I was doing that at college. Obviously, I can't do it now because I was under contract with the Chicago Bears. Oh. But when I was in college, yes, I would do rugby in the winter semester, then football in the fall semester.
And so, no downtime.
Yeah, it was kind of no downtime. There's you know, there's similarities and differences between the two, but the biggest one for me in college was, aside from like the differences of the game, was the conditioning. When I'm playing rugby, I'm about 220.
Yeah.
When I'm playing football, I'm about 250.
So. Wow.
Big difference.
Yeah.
Especially when you do them in the same day because you got to gain or lose 30 pounds in the afternoon. That's not easy.
So it'll take me 3 or 4 games in the winter to kind of get into rugby shape or more, you know. So
why the big discrepancy in weight? I know a different position, but my brother played rugby in college at ISU, and he was a hooker. Is that a position, or was he just kind of loose with the women? I'm not sure which.
I don't know about that.
Now, what is a hooker? Is that like a running back kind of thing in football, or no?
A hooker would be equivalent to a center, you know, the one that hikes the ball.
Okay.
That's what it pretty much, because you can compare the sports kind of the positions. So, you know, the offensive lineman in football would be the forward pack in rugby. So you can kind of compare them. So a hooker in rugby, he's the one right in the middle of the scrum. Most people know what a scrum is.
Yeah.
So they play equivalent to what a center does in football. It's the dirty work.
And what was your position in rugby as opposed to football?
I was inside center or second 5'8" that you mentioned in rugby, and then I was a fullback in football.
So you would have to lose the weight because your speed was needed more than the bulk for football.
Yeah, exactly. In football, you know, as a fullback, you know, you're lead blocking, so I got to be kind of a bit heavier than when I'm in rugby. You know, you're running a lot more, and it's hard to carry around 260 on the field.
Isn't it hard to diet, though?
Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, rugby's so much running that I could probably lose weight just going to practices and stuff. The practices, there's a lot more running in rugby than there is in football.
Since you put in some time with the Bears, how long would Jay Cutler last on a rugby field? That would be pretty, would
it? I don't know.
2 seconds?
Yeah, it's 2 seconds. Such a different sport. Yeah, sure. It's hard to even imagine. But he'd play a first 5'8", which is kind of what Ryan does. You know, those are the similar positions, the playmaking positions.
And he'd have to learn to throw the ball to another team in a whole new sport.
Okay, come on. That's now, listen, easy. Paul is on the reserves, the Chicago Bear reserves. Yeah. He's not going to break bad on that
team. I don't want to get you in trouble.
Can we take a quick break?
Yeah, a quick break, and there are more talk with rugby hunks.
It says that right here.
It says it right
schedule.
On the sheet. I'm
written
not making
by a
that
guy,
up.
Kevin.
Yeah, how about that? Stick around.
Thanks,
if you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Some days, our show doesn't have any rugby hunks at all, but today, we have 3 rugby hunks.
The boys are back in town. Thin Lizzy is an Irish band, and we have Tommy Bowe, a wing for the Irish team in rugby.
Yes.
Big Thin Lizzy fan?
Big Thin Lizzy fan.
Really?
I've actually met a few of them before. They've come to a few matches. So
how about that? How about Morrissey? You like him?
Morrissey, yeah.
Yeah? Van Morrison, he's
Van
Irish.
Van Morrison, yeah.
He's all right.
I'm a fan of Van Morrison.
Elvis Costello?
Elvis.
The Frosted Lucky Charms guy, do you like him?
Oh, he's my favorite.
He's good.
Yeah.
Magically Delicious,
yep,
I hear.
He's very good.
Ryan Crotty, second 5/8 for the New Zealand All Blacks. And who's some famous Kiwis, some famous New Zealanders?
Oh, Sir Edmund Hillary. He's probably as famous as they get.
Yep.
First man up Mount Everest.
He was good.
Athletes.
Wendy, you don't
all
like
the
him?
Athletes. No, I think he's fine. I was going more for the musician end of things,
but that's okay.
I understand
Lord.
He sang when he reached the top.
Lord.
Yeah,
she's
Lord.
Fantastic.
That's right. And Paul Lasique, a Chicago Bears reserve running back and native New Zealander, former rugby player. Now, you guys are doing a lot of press today because the big announcement came out, the All Blacks playing the USA Eagles on November 4th at Toyota Park, and then New Zealand will play Ireland on November 5th at Soldier Field as well. If you want the complete lineup, you can go to therugbyweekend.com.
Yep. Ryan, you're upset with us about something, but you wouldn't tell us what until we got back on air. What are you upset about?
Oh, I was just walking in here admiring this beautiful building, and I noticed there was a lot of stones and each stone was from a different country or different part of the world. I was just wondering where the one from New Zealand was.
I don't know.
Did you walk around the whole building?
Yeah, twice.
The other side too?
Yeah, it was freezing.
The Tribune Tower has all these wonderful artifacts from different places around the world.
Yeah.
There's nothing from New Zealand?
Nothing. We've got some great rocks and stones as well. I can't believe it.
Could you please bring us some
next time.
And we'll scotch tape it to the building.
Had it in your pocket. Taking it from a nice rock.
Duct tape works for everything.
Yeah, we can make that happen. Please help
super
us out
glued
with that.
On the wall.
Yep. What was there from Ireland? Did you notice
there were
something?
Walls of Derry, yeah. There was one there, so very good.
All right, so you're represented. Well, our apologies, but we will make this right. We will find a way to make that happen.
I think I'll get over it.
We can get like a fossilized kiwi bird or something.
Oh, that'd be all right.
And put that in the wall.
All right.
I don't
work.
Mean to be disrespectful.
Paul, I have to ask you, I know you were a member of the reserve, the Bears team last year. Matt Forte is no longer a Bear. Did you get a chance to meet him or work with him?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was on the practice squad. So you have the 53 active man roster, and you have 10 practice squad players.
Yeah.
Usually they're rookies and development players. And his locker was two lockers around.
Was it?
Yeah, so it was him and then Jeremy Langford and then myself and then Kadeem Carey. So all of the running backs and fullbacks were together. So I've met him. I mean, yeah, like we had meetings every day together. So, I mean.
What a phenomenal player. He will
he
be greatly
was,
missed
yeah,
by
awesome,
the city.
Man.
Yeah. That's too bad they couldn't find a way to bring him back.
Yeah.
Too
bad. Great person as well.
Too bad.
We have a listener who just texted us, Bill, because I don't think we get the extremeness of this, the gigantic thing. Just to let you know how big this game is, Ireland has never beaten New Zealand, but last time they played in 2013, it was 22-24, and New Zealand won in the last 30 seconds of the game with a breakaway try. Is that true?
And guess who scored?
Who
would that be? Ryan, did you score it? Did you really? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I thought, but since then I've had to apologize to every Irishman I've met.
He upset a lot of Irish people.
Sure, after. Of course.
That was our day. That was our day.
So okay. In Ireland, where in pubs where there's dartboards, your picture would be in the middle of that, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Wow. I think there's a few, definitely.
Wow. Yeah.
So 22-24, you did explain it, though, that it's a lot of points for a try.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, so it gets to be a high-scoring game.
I think it finished, Ryan's try made it 22-22, and then they had a kick then to win.
Shouldn't a try, because a try indicates you attempted it, shouldn't it be called a made it or something like that?
Cause
you
completion?
Actually, yeah, because you were successful. A try doesn't sell it.
I did try, but that's a new one.
I'm
going
to bring
that
up to the rugby council. All right.
Now, which one of you have been to Chicago before?
Yeah, I've been to Chicago.
Ryan, you have?
Yep.
Not you, Tommy,
no,
or
never.
Paul?
Yeah, I've been
Oh,
to
you've
Chicago.
Obviously. Yeah. The Bears, yes. Yeah. So, Ryan, if you had some time to hang out, where would you show Tommy to hang out?
Yeah, we went to the Blackhawks game.
Pretty
fun. Last time we were here, and it was... watching ice hockey on TV is pretty cool, but going to a live game, it was
nothing
awesome.
More exciting.
Oh, this is
except
speed.
Rugby.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Nah, so I'd definitely take them to a Blackhawks game, especially because they're such a good team as well. So,
all right, Chicago's known for their pizza, their Italian beef sandwiches. What is New Zealand known for, food-wise?
Fish and chips.
Wait, yeah. I thought that was the Ireland thing, fish and chips.
Potatoes.
Just potatoes. Can you put butter on them?
You can put whatever you want on them. Yeah, yep, that's it.
Just potatoes.
When your son comes over, he's going to have his fill of potatoes.
All right, good to know. And what's the drinking age, by the way, in Ireland?
Six.
What age is he?
He's 16, but he's going with the school. They
probably
can't drink.
Not legally drinking Guinness then. I don't think. You're okay.
I don't. He's going with the school, though. They're not going
to
let him drink.
No.
Probably not.
All right, no. But is there a drinking age in Ireland?
Yeah, 18.
Oh, there
it
is 18.
Yeah, 18. Yeah.
You said six.
I thought it was six. Yeah. They must have just changed it.
Maybe the odd parent lets their son have a
I think you're getting that confused with Wisconsin.
Right. I was thinking of Wisconsin. And Guinness is the official beer of everything Irish, right?
That's pretty much us.
That's what you get.
We're brought up on it and potatoes.
Served warm, though, or served at room temperature, or served how?
Cold.
You get it cold then?
Yeah, nice cold.
Because I was in England a few years ago, and they like to sell me on the idea of warm beer. And
No,
that's not good for you.
No, it's not good.
No.
They're just making an excuse that the fridge are broken or something.
And what's a good New Zealand beer?
Oh, Steinlager. That's pretty good. I'll plug the sponsors as well. They're also our sponsors.
Stone Lager?
Steinlager.
I can't understand the language.
What kind of beer is that? How is that brewed up?
It's a lager.
What style is
lager,
it? Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't taste too bad for you.
No? All right.
Come over and try it.
All right. Talk me into it.
When do we go?
Tomorrow afternoon.
All right.
We'll leave with you guys.
Tommy Bow, wing for the Irish team. We're talking rugby, and we're talking with rugby hunks. Ryan Crotty, second 5/8 for the New Zealand All Blacks. And Paul Lasique, Chicago Bears reserve running back and native New Zealander, former rugby player. What's the word about you being with the Bears? When could that happen?
So I signed a future contract with them after last season, so I'll be back in April.
Excellent.
I'm out in Utah, California right now, finishing my last semester of school, and so yeah, I'll be back to give it another crack.
What's your major in school? What are you studying?
I exercise and wellness.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
that all ties in nicely.
Yeah, very, I love sports, so I want to stick in there.
Good.
And you guys are professional athletes. You're not in college, are you too?
No, I wish we have universities and things in New Zealand. Yeah. Nothing like the college system you guys have here. It's
I studied, but I didn't.
Didn't study that hard.
Well, I have my degree.
Oh,
yeah,
there you go.
So I'm all right. Yeah,
excellent.
But,
what's your degree
work
in?
Construction engineering. So
will
you
go to that when your playing days are over? Is that your goal, to go back
to
that?
Come here and get into the construction industry, maybe. Yeah,
done.
Maybe we'll get the Olympics by then, and you can build some structures for that.
Perfect. If you want a leaning tower, then I'm your man.
All right, we'll keep you in mind, Tommy. All right, if you'd like to find out about rugby, and a lot of listeners are really excited about what's going to be happening at Soldier Field, New Zealand and Ireland up against each other November 5th, and then November 4th, Toyota Park, the Maori All Blacks play the USA Eagles. If you want more information on tickets and any info, therugbyweekend.com. Tommy, Ryan, Paul, thank you so much for coming up.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Great to see all of you. We'll take a quick break, and then Steve with the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
The rooms were so much colder then. My father was a soldier then, and times were very hard when I was young.
He's still pretty young, don't
oh,
you
yes.
think?
Oh, yes.
Eric Burden, you're shaking your head.
Sometimes I feel young and sometimes not so young. You can't deny the physical aspect of aging.
It's, sure.
The back aches. You know, the one thing, and I'm not that old yet, but I'm, you know, pushing on the other side of 50. Don't you groan more than you used to?
Oh, man.
Like, oh.
Your body learns to groan. It teaches you to groan.
Eric Burden, of course, the legendary rock star. You know him from the Animals, from War, from his solo career. And Wendy, I don't know if you got to see, but Eric acted out the first few parts of that song. You were flying, and then you were shooting at something in the sky. That was fun to watch.
Yeah, well, war is fun when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Amongst the ruined buildings.
Yeah.
They become the best playground you ever could hope for.
Yep.
And you get to, you're able to distinguish any noise of any flying craft,
mm-hmm.
which came to an end when they invented the jet.
Right. Well, I guess it did. Yeah, didn't
well,
it?
Jets basically sound the same.
Yeah.
You know, every time we talk about the Vietnam War, when it comes up for something, always your music is involved with that. Always. We were reading, like, the soundtrack of what would be from all the veterans and the Animals, just Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood, House of the Rising Sun, all of that. It speaks to a generation of Vietnam vets, and it speaks to us, and it speaks to my 16-year-old son.
I got a very nice note the other day, typed on official paper from a colonel, a retired U.S. Marine Corps, and he started off by saying something really nice, kind of poetic. He said, "I know that over the years we probably stood on opposite sides of the table, but music bridges everything, and you know, and you helped us get through the worst years of our lives." And I thought I've heard a lot of stuff like that, but that it's recent in my mind because it was just the other day in Washington D.C. So he didn't leave an address. I probably would have got back to him. No. I probably would have enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah. Did you think for a minute your music was cutting through like that? At the time?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, I mean, our first visit to America, we were told when we were boarding the plane to come to America. And it was mentioned to us by members of the Beatles before we ever got here. Like, when you get to America, man, remember, don't mention the war. And it became like a standard joke, you know, like, hey, don't mention the war. You know, this burger's not done too right. Don't mention the war. You know, but let's face it, man, it was one of the ugliest conflicts. It seemed to go on forever. And nothing seemed to deter them. And there's a lot of music and a lot of poetry came out of it, but the thing that comes out of it for me is the amount of guys that are sitting at home, you know, smoking a lot of pot, trying to get over the fact that they've been dosed by Agent Orange. You know, I have a friend of mine who was an ex-vet, and somebody came up and said, oh, you Americans, we hate you guys. You bombed our country. He said, man, my country bombed me as well.
Yeah, and no support for the Vietnam vets, and hopefully that's going to be turned around someday. Yeah. I don't know when.
So, Eric, would you agree that music became the voice of rebellion, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it still can be, but, you know, I mean, there's not the same. You know, time changes everything, and when something's new to us, a nuance, it speaks louder than it would in historical terms.
Stevie Van Zandt had something really wonderful to say. I found this, of course, you can go to ericburden.com and find out all the information about City Winery tonight. You can also go to citywinery.com. But Stevie Van Zandt says he invented the genre of the white guy singing low. And then Steven Tyler, who doesn't sing very low at all, mentioned when you did The House of the Rising Sun, you had to start so low so you could move up on the octave. It is such a beautiful song.
Well, that's right. I mean, with anything, if you start, how low can you go?
Yeah.
Leads you to how high you can reach. You know, it's the same in any aspect of growth. You know, if you begin at a low end, the highs can come.
Like the Star Spangled Banner. If you don't start low enough, you're never going to hit that one spot.
Yeah, right. Of course, you know, it's true of a lot of things.
Spill the Wine with War, funked it up a little. Was that fun?
Yeah, Spill the Wine gets me into a lot of trouble because I try and explain what the song means and nobody gets it. And even just recently, Bruce Springsteen was on the phone saying, hey, man, I'm using Spill the Wine to open my show. What are the lyrics? I don't know. What are you saying? Well, I'm saying this. Well, it doesn't mean that. It means this, you know. So it's endless.
I know you've worked with a who's who from the world of rock and roll, but when Bruce Springsteen calls you, is there a moment of wow, or is it just another day for you?
For me it was amazing because some time later, Bruce had asked me to be participate in a recording session, and he would be the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I just said no. And I don't know why I said no, because I like the guy.
Sure.
It's the rebel in you, man.
You know, but sometimes your gut just says, no, not at the moment. You know.
But he must have been surprised, because I'm guessing not a lot of people say no to him at this point.
Exactly. So when he, you know, doubled down on who I am and what I do at the big festival down in Texas. South by Southwest. It was the linchpin of the whole opening debate. And he was talking about the animals for about half an hour. Listen up, kids, if you want to hide. do this, do that, you know, and, you know, copy the best, you know, copy who you want, copy the best. And
yeah,
this is what I played all of my teenage years was. And he started playing, we got to get out of this place and all that. I mean, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
And it was a weight off, that's why I'm called Eric Burden. I carry a lot of weight around with me. And that was a big weight lifted off my shoulder to think that this guy, who's the current rock star around the world, had the dignity and the honesty to and forgiveness.
But he admires you, and that's the best, to know somebody at the top of their game is doing it because they saw you do it, and they said, I want to do like that guy's doing.
Yeah. I think he's like the strongest thing to come along in many years. I mean, audiences come away from his gigs absolutely drenched and tired.
Yeah. Like 3.5 hours
yeah,
long.
Yeah. I mean, he's got so much energy, it's unbelievable.
And he just was in Chicago doing the River album, and I saw him on the River tour a million years ago, and really, 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
You can't even believe it.
Yeah. And, you know, the guy is really a poet. I mean, he really speaks the voice of the American experience to outsiders in a lot of ways that people claim Dylan does and whatever, a lot of other artists. But, you know, he says a lot. I mean, some of his lines about Vietnam, you know, I got a friend went to fight the communists. I can't remember the exact lyrics, but he went to fight the commies. They're still there, and
got
he's
a friend
all
in Baltimore,
dead.
Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, wow, that's really cool.
Fought a war and he never came back. A hungry heart, is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right, so Bill had mentioned, you know, the Springsteen connection and how Springsteen was honest enough to admit that he'd idolized your music and you. Who did you look up to? Who got you into the whole rock and roll business?
Chicago.
Really?
Chicago. Yeah. Chicago Blues.
Yeah. Oh, the Chicago Blues, not Chicago 25 or 6-4.
No, because they came after you.
It's still here.
But the blues scene meant a lot to you. You
can tell by the early...
It was a religion.
Yeah?
I remember taking a knife and cutting my arm and writing blues in blood.
Wow.
That's serious.
You're committed.
On blues people.
Wow.
And Nina Simone looked at it and she went, may I borrow this to read? And I said, yeah, okay, if you return it. You know. And she said, no problem. And like 3 years later, she gave it back to me.
She did. She returned it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. We got to take a quick break. Come back. We'll wrap up with Eric Burden. He is a legend. He is a rock god. He is at City Winery tonight at 8 p.m. You can go to ericburden.com, check out his website, or if you want ticket info, citywinery.com. Back with Eric Burden, 720 WGN. That's that blues influence.
That's just beautiful. Oh.
So what blues guys did you hang with that you like the most?
Muddy Waters, Johnny Hooker, Chuck Berry, who I had to say to him in a conversation one day, Chuck, you are a blues man. And, no, I'm not, man. I write songs for white school kids, you know. And you write songs for everybody, and I think that you're actually the poet laureate of America. And he was like, oh, he took me to lunch, you know. And he had a real bad reputation with people, but
yeah.
I found him to be very...
Really? Because My Ding-a-ling, that song, wouldn't have made me think that at all.
Not by that song. Eric Burden is our guest. Eric, if you could go back to any day in your life, revisit any day for whatever reason, what day would you go back to?
Usually I say, to get around it, I say tonight.
Yeah?
City Winery.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because there's so much memorable moments.
Oh, yeah.
and they just keep coming, you know. But tonight is a little special tonight because tonight's the last night with my keyboard player, who is a very important entity in my music, and it's his last night tonight. He's retiring.
Oh.
How do you retire in rock and roll? Come on.
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah, the love is there. You just keep doing it. It's fun, isn't it?
I mean, I don't think there's, you know, the retirement concept, it should end, because as long as people can contribute, why should they even think about hanging it up? And, you get old really quick thinking about retirement or becoming a... You know.
Got to keep doing it.
Yep.
Keep doing it. Keep rocking and rolling. We have a listener who wants to say something to you, by the way. And this is Mark. Mark, you've got Eric Burden right here listening to you.
Got the first album from 1966. You got the pale suits, the blue shirts, and the black tie. And the best one, I had the first Stones, never bought a Beatles. Blue, blue feelings, send you back to Walker, the best stuff ever. And I'm going to try to get my ass down there tonight. I've never seen you live, but I still listen to the stuff at least once a week, and it puts me in a great mood.
Hey, take it easy. Cool down. You're with me now. Thanks. Well, you're very complimentary.
Thanks for calling, Mark.
Eric, is there a version of you today? Do you see any young performer and you say to yourself, that's like the new version of me? Is there anybody working today that reminds you of you?
Well, Taylor Swift.
Really?
You're
no
just
way.
Saying it. You're saying that to piss Kanye West off. That's why you're saying
she's
it.
She's a great musician. Great singer. She's very sweet to look on.
Yeah. And you can't not like her at first. And I know a lot of people that were older men would be like, boy, she's cute. And then they'd say, I feel funny saying that. But she's good. She's good and listenable and catchy tunes. Mm-hmm.
She's sweet, but she kicks ass.
Mm-hmm. So Taylor Swift is the new Eric Burden.
You're dreaming.
All right, so you mentioned, you know, that you were influenced by the blues and that Springsteen has fessed up to saying how much he's loved your work and you inspired him. I have a 16-year-old son, Michael, who you inspired him. And, Michael, you have one question for Eric Burden. Don't embarrass me.
I will try my best, Mother. I was thinking about this, and there was a big change in your sound from 1965 to 1967, 68. You went from doing amped up covers of Jimmy Reed tunes to like sprawling epics such as, you know, Sky Pilot. What in turn, you know, kind of influenced that musical change? I know that you were spending a lot of time in San Francisco at the time.
Oh.
And I have a pretty big feeling that that had something. But what else?
Well, I left the Animals, the original Animals, because all we did was make covers of what we were doing on the road. You know, so we could go into a studio and knock out an album in a week. And people are still today buying that stuff, you know. But then San Francisco was a whole new thing. It was the American thing coming alive, you know, away from the Beatles and the Stones. Suddenly there was San Francisco, the San Francisco scene. And I've spent my life heading to places where the action is,
mm-hmm.
whether it's traveling around Mexico for a year by myself, living 3 years in Germany, 3 years in Spain. I did that because I said to myself one day, this is not all there is in life. And I'm not going to do this for the rest of my life. And I want to meet new people. I want to go to the source of the Beatles story. So I went to Hamburg and searched out guys that were still there and still had the memories of what it was like to work in those early nightclubs in Hamburg. That's what started the British thing, really, on a big commercial level. So I had to find out what it was like and, you know, yeah, and stuff like that. And I still continue to do that to this day.
And City Winery, what are we going to expect tonight?
Well, I always have to do the old, you know,
the classics.
Yeah,
popular
sure.
Stuff,
we're know. Expecting them.
Yeah, but
people are vultures.
They are.
But if you know, if you love blues and jazz the way I did when I was a kid, they can't stay the same and be truthful. You can't be truthful to the original thing if you keep it the same all
right.
the time.
Right.
You gotta spread your wings.
And you'll mix
improvise.
In a,
yep.
You'll mix in a couple of Taylor Swift songs.
Oh, yeah.
You should.
Sure.
Yeah.
People want to hear that.
All right. Sophie has to get this in, and we are running late. Sophie, go. Eric Burden, really quick here.
So, I just wanted you to know that I saw you when I was 13 years old, and that was 50 years ago, and you were my very first rock and roll concert, and I'll never forget it.
Thank you. You didn't scream, did you?
I think everybody screamed.
Sophie was the one screaming.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Sophie. Okay, go back to
you're
bed.
Welcome.
All right, try and go to City Winery tonight because the second of two shows, two nights, City Winery. Go to citywinery.com, ericburden.com. It was an honor. It was a pleasure to meet you. You should be higher than 57 in Rolling Stone's 100 Greatest Singers of All Time, in my opinion.
Yep,
I thought I was. But thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so
and
much,
And Michael,
Eric.
Decent question. Thanks for not embarrassing me.
Yeah.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Thanks,
you
Eric.
Will.
An honor to meet you, sir. A quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. That was Eric Burden who was here. That was actually the real Eric Burden, not a guy pretending. That was the real guy.
It was really cool, and he likes Taylor Swift. Who would have thunk?
That would have surprised me.
It was one of my first Columbia Record Club records was...
Was Eric Burden?
Stand Tall.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, the Columbia Record Club. Was that where you taped the penny to the index card?
Yeah,
right.
And you got to... And you were sitting there, and it was so hard to decide what 13 records, because it was 12, and you got an additional one for that penny.
That's right. That's a bargain.
And it was like, okay, should I get this one? Or that one, and then you'd scratch it out.
I am currently still paying that off. I have three more I need to buy.
I was just explaining it to my son last week. I said, then, you know, you'd get, because there was a Nazareth. I was listening to a Nazareth song, and
love
I said,
hurts.
Yeah, I said, then you'd get song, you know, albums if you didn't send the card back. I said, for example, I had a Nazareth album that I wouldn't have purchased otherwise.
Well, they had what they called the selection of the month, where they would choose, obviously, an album that wasn't selling well, and everybody would get that album or CD. And then you were constantly in the hole. Like, there was no way, even though that
well,
seems like...
Because it was $35.99 for one thing. It's but, like you got those free, but then you spent so much.
And they check up the postage, too, remember?
And yeah. It was one of those things where all you had to do, it was like a perfect kid procrastination.
Yeah.
All you had to do was lick the envelope,
yeah.
Put it back in,
right.
Put it in the mail.
Right.
But instead, here comes another Neil Diamond album.
Right. Yes.
Month after month.
But when you think about it, when you're a kid, I think that's the most valuable lesson. The Columbia Record House, Columbia Record Club is the most valuable lesson, proving above and beyond anything else that if something seems too good to be true, it is.
Although, you guys, this is dated December 24th, 2015, so just a few months ago, mere months after Columbia House filed for bankruptcy, the Fallen Music mail order giant is reportedly poised to relaunch as a vinyl-only delivery service.
Ah, you know what? That makes a lot of sense.
Not a bad move.
Well, they have all the records left over because they didn't sell what they expected to.
Right.
The soundtrack to A Star Is Born.
Oh, my God. You're so right.
In the mail.
Now, here's what I'm remembering.
You are right.
Tell me if this was Columbia House or if this was somebody else. I remember there were sheets that looked like sheets of stamps, and you would cut them out almost like stamps, but they were like
perforated.
Record albums.
You'd rip them and lick them and put it on your little
in the
order
card,
form.
Right? Wasn't that part
yes.
of it when you'd first join up?
Yeah. Half of it was just it was so fun to do a puzzle.
It was.
That's why kids did
it. It was a puzzle filled with John Denver albums.
Interactive.
So just rich, you know, 13.
Oh,
13.
For a penny.
You guys, that was a lot.
It was just, it was so much, and you could risk,
yeah.
You know?
And you justified by going, going, okay, so even if they charge me $50 for my next record.
Which they did.
I know, but then you'd be like, I got 13 for right. a penny. So in the course of 30 years, it'll all average out to like, what, $15.99 a record?
Yeah. All you had to do was send it back in the mail.
You are so funny. Well, the Wall Street Journal spoke with Columbia House owner John Lipman, who purchased the brand for $1.5 million.
Until Martin Scorsese bought it, and then he upped the price of each album to $30,000 per. Good move, Martin Scorsese.
Do you remember the band? I can't remember the name. Kevin, you know the name of the band that Scorsese bought a yep. record label and put them on. Who was it?
Are you just making
Hang
noises?
On, Grandpa.
What are you doing up there?
Wu-Tang Clan.
No.
It's not Wu-Tang Clan.
Hang on, Gramps. The band what, Kevin?
Nothing is what they're called.
The band Nothing. We spoke to them, and they were on Martin Scorsese's record label. And when they heard this go down, they said they want no part of them.
Right.
And they said, no, we
good
want
for
out.
Them. Very good.
And
move.
They're nothing.
Right.
I mean, you haven't really heard of them except for that. And it could have really catapulted them.
They have a conscience. Good for them.
Absolutely.
I like those guys.
So now the Wall Street Journal spoke with Columbia House owner John Lipman, purchased the brand for $1.5 million back in December, intends to target what he sees as an untapped market for physical product. You can see a yearning and an interest to try a new format, he explained, for a category that is meaningful and growing rapidly. You don't see a whole lot of choice. There are a ton of vinyl enthusiasts.
Oh, I know.
Well, and there's a real growth, and DNA Info is writing about it today. We might have them on the business lunch about record stores coming back.
Are they good?
Absolutely.
I hope so.
That's excellent. It could take the spot of all the video stores that went under.
It could. Earlier, Steve, when we found out that Eric Burdon was going to be with us, Wendy said, I wish I could just run out, because there was a time where here in the city, you could run out and go to one of a half a dozen record stores.
Almost on any corner.
Virgin Records was right in the corner for a while.
Yeah, because I said to Wendy, I think I'm pretty sure Rose Records is still up. Go to Rose Records. But as it turns out, I was off by 14 years.
I remember when Virgin Records opened, Cher was on the corner there, and I ran into her and I said, I had one of your albums in the 70s.
Got it from Columbia House.
Got it in the mail.
That's right. That's a compliment. I bet Cher was thrilled to hear that.
I'm sure if I just put it back in the mail.
Oh, come on. All right, a quick
break. That was before auto-tune, too.
It was, wasn't it? All right, a quick break, and then we'll sort out more things. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
A little Ramones for you. Could you get that on the Columbia House little Rip It sticker for the
albums? I'm trying to
albums?
Remember if the Ramones were on there. There wasn't, if I remember correctly, they would send you that monthly catalog of what was available, and it hardly changed at all from month to month. Like, once something was in that rotation of what you could or couldn't get, that was it. They didn't really vary it from month to month. Like,
did you read it in the bathroom, too?
No.
Oh, did I say that out loud?
No.
You could just go through catalogs. It was so fun to go through, or wherever.
They would send it to you. And originally, like, I'm trying to remember where the first offer was. Was it like in every magazine? Did every magazine have a chance for you to be a member of Columbia House?
Yeah, because that little note card would fall out.
Yeah, that's true. I think I got mine in Parade magazine for some reason.
Listen, it's like a coming of age. I first got my membership to Columbia Record Club.
Right. But then when you talk to your friends, you realize that everyone at some point realizes they've been rooked. Like, what started out as a miracle, you talk to a friend and they go, yeah, I'm down $3,000 on that thing, that 12 albums for a penny.
I don't believe anyone was down that much. And quite honestly, it started, the Columbia Record Club started everyone's record collection.
Probably.
Because that was 13. And for a kid, that it would take you a while to get 13 albums.
Well, I can't speak for you, but I know I had several prior to that. But then when you saw that, because at the time, wasn't an album about $9? Isn't that what you'd usually pay, $9 to $11 or $12?
I used to go to Rolling Stone Records in Norwich, and you could go to the very back, and it was the cutout section, and it is the records that would have like a hole punch in them or something that they were given to records to radio stations.
Promo records.
Right. So you would buy them, and they were cheaper.
I remember this, and I'm
so
sure
that was
you
$4.99.
Will... Oh, was it?
Or $9.99.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's a deal, though.
When I would buy singles, I used to go to Hegwisch Records. There was one in Oak Forest. And I would go, and I would have a list of singles that I would want to buy. And they always had one or two in stock, but then they would order the rest for me. And then about 6 to 8 months later, those records would come in, and I could buy them and listen to them. It's not like now where everything's so instantaneous. You can download from iTunes within a minute, it would be a half a year before the 45s I wanted came in. I'd have to wait patiently.
I know, but there's something that had to be said about waiting. Somebody said, who actually ever paid for the other selections from Columbia House? I just changed names on the form and ordered more.
Oh, no.
They're going to get you?
I've got friends in jail because of that. You can't do that.
Wendy, for the life of me, I cannot understand how Rolling Stone is still in business today in Norwich. Rolling Stone Records is still around?
Are they still there? I'm shocked to find that out.
I go to Valhalla. Val Camaletti in Oak Park has National Record Store Day, and I bring my son Michael there every year, and he ends up spending $200 on records.
Wow.
And they're used, most of them. And he has a turntable, and a lot of younger kids are turning to vinyl, and there are just people that never left vinyl.
Right, right. There's still a store. I don't know if you call it a record. You wouldn't call it a record store because there's no more records except for the vinyl. But there's one in Woodfield up in one of the upper sections.
The Flipside?
Is it Flipside?
I don't know. That was where there was.
I don't know whose it is. But it's a vast store.
Sam Goody?
Maybe it is Sam Goody. I don't know whose it is. But I'll wander in there, and they've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of CDs.
Oh, my God.
They're still there. They're just hard to find.
Robert, you are going to be in so much trouble. They are going to hunt you down. What did you do?
Well, back then, they never checked the address. And in 1974, when I did mine, I was 15. And I got my, I think it was 12, 11 plus 1. And so I started using my siblings' names and my neighbors' names. And it was easy to get a penny back then, and they sent me everything that I wanted. That's how I started my collection. To this day, now I got over $20,000.
How many accounts did you have total, Robert?
11 at that time.
Nice. Very nice.
They're going to find you. They're
going to
hunt
jail,
you
Robert.
Down.
Be ready.
You're going to go to vinyl hell.
Hey, when you're growing up in Chicago and listening to rock music, and back then it was so eclectic. You got what you wanted for a penny.
Wasn't it the best?
Well, that was awesome.
All right. Well, thanks for the little flashback there, Robert.
My favorite part of Robert's call when he used the phrase, it was easy to get a penny back then. Because now, who's got a penny anymore?
Do you know what the hardest part of it was for me? To find the index card and a piece of tape at the same time.
That was tough. Yeah.
Because the tape dispenser was always empty.
I know.
He had a nice little tape dispenser, never any tape in it.
So true.
Dale, what are you thinking?
I went to college in Terre Haute in the late 60s and early 70s, where Columbia House was, that's where their main place was.
Their warehouse.
In Terre Haute.
And every album that they sent out that you did not want and you returned, they sold them there for $1 a piece.
Whoa.
And they had a warehouse, and I'm not exactly, you know, there's like 10,000 albums in there every week.
All Jim Croce.
Oh, I would have paid. I got Jim Croce.
I love Jim Croce.
And I must have had 500 albums, and my fraternity house burned down. I lost all of them.
Oh, that's not good.
How dare you make fun of Jim Croce?
I love Jim Croce. I just remember he was a mainstay. There was a whole page of Jim Croce and John Denver.
I got a name.
That's right. But when you got the monthly catalog, you go, oh, there's page 18, the Jim Croce page. Time in a bottle. I got it.
Didn't have any John Denver albums. Sorry. But
no, that's all right.
Well, you missed out.
Right. Right.
Thank
I still listen to Grandma's Featherbed and feel good about myself.
What? What is Grandma's Featherbed?
That's a John Denver song. You never heard that? You never
okay,
heard that song?
That is weird. First of all, I mean, Rocky Mountain High, the song he did about the Annie song.
Yeah, you fill up my senses.
Grandma's Feather Duster?
Grandma's Feather Bed. It's the greatest song of all time ever written about a grandmother's bed.
Find that song, Kevin.
In my opinion. Kevin, see if they put that on the internet. Grandma's Feather Bed, John Denver. Look under classics. All right.
Grandma's Feather Bed.
When you hear it, you'll go, oh, yeah, of course, the Grandma's Feather Bed song. It was 9 feet high, 6 feet wide. You never heard that song?
Oh, my God, it's right here.
It'll change your life.
I doubt that.
Prepare for your life to be changed. Sing this with the Darling Boys.
When I was a little bitty boy, just off the floor, we used to go out to Grandma's house and look at the soul. Had chicken pie and country ham, homemade butter on the bread.
great big feather bed.
It was 9 feet high and 6 feet wide. Soft as down and chin.
See what I mean?
This.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
This is the first song Minnie Pearl and I ever danced to was this song. At a mixer.
Did you leave a tag on your underwear?
Yeah. Howdy.
That's what size cup bra she had.
Yes.
Howdy cup. Yes.
She had them specially made.
Come on, I've never heard this song in my life.
Oh, this was a huge hit. With people
like
who
it.
Slept at their grandma's house.
Grandma's feather bed. What was John Denver sleeping on his grandma's feather bed
Times
for?
Were hard. He wasn't always a big star. Listen to all the people clapping. He won
Didn't
over America.
Didn't get much sleep, had a lot of fun on grandma's feather bed. Hopefully grandma wasn't in it at the time.
That he's very vague about that. Oh.
Did you ever buy any of his records? Because I'm really sad that he's no longer with us.
I had several of his 8-track tapes.
I bypassed the whole 8-track era.
Oh, you missed out.
I went from 45s to cassettes.
There's nothing more beautiful than having a song really kick it up at the end, only to hear it stop, hear the track change, and then pick up again.
Like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I bet is it that? Right towards the end where you'd hear the what would the sound be?
Yeah,
the
it would click? Be yeah, like that. Yep.
And then it would come back for the last 2 seconds of a song.
Right.
Poorly
that made
done.
Sense. That made a perfect sense. All right, we will take a break. We'll come back and
check
we'll
out Rose
find
Featherbed.
Out, maybe we'll see if we're invited to. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.